Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer. Streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
Feels like work. Shooting the shit for 2 hours, drinking beer, and talking beer. What a wonderful experience.
Can we not have the barf bucket near my mixing board?
I think everybody can read the book.
I knew you were going to use this book as an excuse to quit doing this show.
Mrs. Bub, if you want, I can mail you the Bub Timer.
Yeah, Newcastle. Especially in the can. Have you ever had it in the can? No, I have not had it in the can.
Notice I closed my eyes and I concentrated really hard.
Now, live from the Brewing Network studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Yes, it is The Session, and we are back here on a Monday, back in the studio, talking about beer. It's hard to get a better life than this, you know what I mean?
Is it?
I think so.
Oh.
Other than having to be at a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah, easy.
Right. Yeah, it's easy money, JC.
Oh, just talk about beer. Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Why not, man? And we're pretty good at it, too. Let's not sell ourselves short.
Okay. Positive Monday here on the Brewing Network.
That's right, Bob. Positive Mondays.
Quite the motivational speaker.
Yeah. Motivational Mondays, hashtag.
Fired up.
I think it will be great. I think we're going to do awesome.
Oh.
And, you know, I think people will love us.
Well, that's a high bar to be setting this early in the show.
Yeah.
The intro music's not even done.
No, it's not.
All right.
And that's the show, everybody.
Hey! Have a good week.
Just kidding. Anyway, this is The Session, and we have a pretty awesome show for you, but... Before we get into all those details, I want to thank More Beer, our fine sponsor. You can go to morebeer.com and get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home.
Yes.
Do it. I was there. When the fuck was I there? Friday. I was there Friday to get bottling stuff for my NHC entries, my dominating NHC entries.
Your re-entry into the world of homebrewing.
That's right. I retired.
Yes.
Retired loser. Loser.
Okay.
I think I've entered the NHC like 5 times, and I've made it past the second round into the second round. Past the first round.
Got all meta on us.
Like, twice.
That's good. That's good average.
It's not bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, I did it every time, but...
Yeah, well,
2 out of 5.
We can't
bad.
All be really good at things.
Okay,
I mean, you know what I mean. Then it wouldn't be then, well. Then
we can't all have 8 entries either. Yeah.
There's always this year,
right? There's always this year. Yeah. So I got 2 entries. I brought them.
Oh,
And you've got the balls to have us taste them?
I do, because right. I'm actually pretty proud of it.
Oh.
And I'll tell you what.
No, I have, that pressure's on me now.
Yeah, right.
What if I don't like it?
Now you have to enjoy it.
Speaking of balls,
because it's positive Monday. Like it.
That's right. Yeah, you have to give me, we'll go back to the compliment sandwich format.
Okay, that's great. That's right.
And I think it'll be amazing. My problem is, though, in bottling. Because I have like a really old counter pressure filler from Morebeer.
Yeah.
But I don't have, like, I didn't trust it because it literally hasn't been cleaned in like 8 years.
And you weren't going to do that this weekend.
And I wasn't going to, because I don't know if I could put it back together. It's like one of the older ones.
Yeah,
they've since streamlined. Right.
Yeah. They used to have three or four valves on there.
Yeah. And like half of it was brass.
Oh, yeah.
So this is like the brass version.
Okay. Yep.
So I went and bought a bottle filler. I'm like, I could just wedge it in the faucet. It's fine. It's not fine. It doesn't fit. So I...
The faucet of what?
My kegerator, my tap.
Oh, so you were going from a keg through a tap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the best.
No, it's going to be amazing. Don't worry about it. So I went and I had it carbonate like 20 PSI. For like 2 days.
That's a little higher than...
It's a little higher than a lot. It's like, I normally carbonate like 10.
Okay.
But for only 2 days and then you lower it down?
Yeah.
It might... Okay. I mean, if it tastes fine...
Hey! So what are you going to do?
Yeah. So how did it taste off the tap?
It tasted fine.
Did it taste a little over-carbonated?
That's a really good question. Did it taste over-carbonated? No,
it's a taste. They say texture. That's how I carbonate my beers. I pour off a slow pour and then just put it in my mouth and see what it does. Yeah. You know?
If he's not shaking it and it's just sitting, at
I did
20,
shake it a couple times.
Well, but only a couple times right at the beginning and then just let it sit. You're probably not. You're not running the risk of significantly overcarbonating in just 2 days.
Yeah.
At 20 psi.
But if it's at 10 psi and you put it at 20 for two days, and you've got and it's a fairly full keg.
I guess
you could be up to like 16 or so in 2 days.
I guess it was technically 3 days because I did it Sunday night.
Oh,
so I kegged Friday morning.
It's definitely ruined.
Shit.
Well, no, if it didn't taste overcarbonated,
right.
No,
I don't. You would taste it.
Yeah, I don't think it's overcarbonated.
Fine.
And the
how did it go into the bottle?
Well,
it
spout.
It foamed a fuck ton. I couldn't get the bottle filler into the faucet.
Weird.
Which, right?
That's not what
I
it's
thought for sure it would fit. I don't know why in what plane of reality.
It's a filler that connects to your faucet.
That was existing. It's not a filler.
A filler that you're supposed to slide a piece of vinyl tubing onto. He just
perhaps
shoved in the tap.
Oh.
I tried.
Yeah.
It gets better. So, in order to make a seal. In order to make a seal, I took some Teflon tape.
Yeah,
from my toolbox.
All right.
And I gave that fucker about 40 turns on the thing.
Yeah.
Wiggled it around in the sanitizer.
Give it some girth.
And shoved its ass up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
A little.
Well, the first time it didn't. The first time I pulled the tap and it just shot off and beer kind of exploded everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That means you had a good seal. I was worried about like if it wasn't tight.
Oh, that's true.
You'd be pulling oxygen in as you.
Oh, fuck. I didn't think about that.
Well, you tested it by blowing that thing off.
Yeah. I did. And then I dropped the CO2 down to like 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Bled it a little bit.
Very good. Yep.
And then ran it through. So it foamed quite a bit.
Right.
But I had a bowl underneath to catch it.
Sure.
And then after I was done filling it, I poured it into a pint glass and drank it.
Fine.
Oh, I thought you were going to pour that bucket full into the bottle.
No. I'm not
so
that
you,
stupid.
Okay. So you capped on foam.
So I capped
but
on foam.
But as you
foam,
were filling it,
mostly
it was just basically into the shoulders of the bottle, maybe. And then you let it kind of rise up to the proper level. Then you stop filling.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I think it's... Yeah. I capped on foam. And a couple times I put the cap on and I had to hold it because it was like...
Oh, it's still trying to get out of there.
Yeah, so...
And if anything, a little overcarbonation would help in that situation.
Yeah.
Because you... Bottling that way, you lose a bit. So...
Yeah.
It's probably going to be a little less carbonated.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I knew that what I was doing wasn't the most amazing way to bottle. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to like
any extra ones.
I did. So this is some of them. I bottled an entire case. Yeah, right.
You entered
when you
under
get your score sheets back.
You entered under Doe's, right?
Under Doe,
yes.
Well, it's Club of the Year for sure.
Right.
No, the Brewing Network or Brewing Network Cometh.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh,
Cometh.
But yes, when I get my score sheets back, I'm going to sit and try to taste it. And I know it won't be the same beer, but it'll be relatively close, and I can and it'll help me a little bit. But I bottled a case. I bottled half a case of the oatmeal stout, half a case of the Grodzitski.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens.
So we get to have one tonight. That's great.
Yeah.
I always bottle a couple extra and at least taste it on judging day.
Yeah.
So that way, theoretically, you might get a somewhat representative example of what they're tasting.
Yeah, and that's what I don't know when judging day is, but that's what I'm planning on doing. I shipped them off today. Warren's going to let me use his beer gun, but I was like, I kind of want to bottle these like right now because I need to ship them tomorrow. So, and I didn't want to learn how to use a new thing, even though I kind of invented my own thing that sucked.
The beer gun is so easy.
Well, easier than what I'd. I was cussing. I was calling myself all kinds of names. Every time I was yelling, you could hear the TV in the living room turn up a couple notches louder. Taryn was just like, I'm just going to turn this up and not worry about it.
All the cats left the garage.
Oh, they were pissed. Yeah. Everyone was pissed. I was pissed. I was dragging beer everywhere. It was a nightmare, dude.
So when are you going to homebrew next?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
I felt like a homebrewer again, which is kind of nice. Because normally I just keg it and then there you go. But somewhere, not a homebrewer again. That's kind of not really what I meant, but you know, there's some level of like homebrewing that most of us keg people don't really experience, which is bottling.
Oh yeah,
anymore, right? So
it's the number one reason to stop homebrewing.
It really is. Yeah. You know, I wonder if you surveyed people who exited the homebrewing industry.
I got tired of cleaning bottles. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. It felt good to spray beer everywhere again.
Well, and now that you're moving, you're just not going to clean the garage.
You're not going to
move houses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to light the thing on fire.
So you're going to brew a ton of beer between now and when you move.
Yeah. Well, and then we were looking at the house yesterday, and the gal's like, oh, so if you have an old fridge, I'm like, yeah, I have two, as a matter of fact. She's like, you're going to want a dedicated circuit because the housing building codes are so sensitive now that, like, if you have a 20-year-old fridge, once it kicks on, it will trip all the breakers.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
It's to save the environment.
It's right.
Yeah, so you use less electricity.
Meanwhile, I get soaked for $600.
Right. Well, you're not supposed to think about that.
Yeah, but I think I can put them all in one outlet, right?
Yeah.
It's two fridges. It's just two.
And just hope they never turn on at the same time.
No.
That's when they'll shut off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. Shit. Yeah.
So.
Wait a minute.
New houses.
Might be a way to do that.
Yeah, extension cord and run it to another circuit.
Yeah, well, like all the outlets in the garage are on the same circuit or something like that.
Right. Yeah. So the key would be to get that to change.
Yeah.
And have two,
and you can't.
Then you'd be fine.
Well, that's what I mean. Like you can do it, but you have to pay for it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
$570.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that.
Well, that or you maybe will have trip breakers and warm beer every now and then.
Yeah. Whatever. Whatever, Warren.
Hey. It's your life.
Yeah, it is my life.
And your garage.
Thank you for asking. Let's do some feedback here. Feedback today is brought to you by the Beer Law Center. Our good friend John, the Beer Law Center, working hard for you to make sure that nobody rips you off. You know, because, look, getting ripped off is not fun. It's not fun. It's not funny. And it's not fun.
Unless you're doing the ripping.
Unless you're doing the ripping. And then you don't want to go up against John from the Beer Law Center.
No.
I'll tell you that right now. This is from Sent from my iPhone. He says, hey guys, I love the show, even though I'm an East Coaster and like East Coast IPAs. He says, to each his own. Anyway, my wife and I are heading to California for a vacation, and I was wondering what breweries you would recommend we try. We will be in Irvine, San Diego area. Thanks in advance, and keep up the great work.
Well, we don't have an East Coast brewery, so he's SOL.
Yeah, so he's fucked, dude.
Yeah, the beer's clear here.
Let's go back.
Sort of.
Ish.
Well, he didn't say New England style. He said it's East Coast style.
East Coast, that's true. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean.
All right.
I know there's a couple places in Irvine, or at least in that area. I forget the names. San Diego, of course, Society. Bagby Beer is kind of in that area, too. Mm-hmm. Oceanside, I think, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know where Irvine is, so.
It's just south of Anaheim.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like 10 minutes south of like Orange and Anaheim.
Oh, is that close to Torrance and where Monkish is?
I don't know.
I know Chapman either. Craft is
there.
Okay.
In Orange.
San Diego has like 8 million breweries. I think you're going to be fine. I think throw a rock. In San Diego, right. And you'll hit it. I don't know that much of the Southern California beer scene.
I think the Brew Guru app would probably help.
The Brew Guru app. Bev, wow, look at you.
Yeah. I think Ballast Point's down there, right?
I think, well, no, they're in Mexico.
Oh, okay. Farther south.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Brew Guru, hey, sent from my iPhone, Beverly just brought up the Brew Guru app. It's free from the American Homebrewers Association. It delivers sage brewing knowledge and money-saving deals at breweries. So basically, you download this app, and it will give you not only articles from Zymergy, but it'll let you know what breweries are around you, dude, and if they offer a discount or not. So you can use your AHA discount. So check them out. Download the free Brew Guru app sent from my iPhone, and have a good time. Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. I don't know, but definitely go to Society. Hit those guys up because they're really ugly. Actually, there's a cool place to eat in San Diego called Sausage and Meat, is what it's called.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
That place was awesome.
It was really good. It has a great beer selection and tons of weird sausage, and their food was delicious.
Yeah. We
went there twice.
And even a spirit selection, too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They had a good cocktail menu, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you find a place that serves meat and liquor, go to that place.
Well, and also if they differentiate between sausage and meat.
Oh, right, yeah.
You gotta love that. This is from Jason in Gilroy. He says, "Hey, fuckwads. I just wanted to say that Julian's interview was one of the best in the history of the BN, Shades of Peter from Alesmith back in 2006. I don't even remember 2006, so good on you, dude.
I feel like Shades of Peter should be a beer from Alesmith.
I think it should be. 50 Shades of Peter. He holds back nothing, and he comes off much better than those who keep secrets. In your pre-interviews, you should emphasize how important and meaningful the sharing of knowledge is. Any brewer who withholds ingredients or techniques for fear of losing a competitive edge or market share is a fucking idiot, and they look silly for it." Also, try to remember to ask for a recipe that homebrewers can use. In your early years, you were much better about this. Yeah, you're right. I don't know what to say. I think it's just, I don't know. We used to do it a lot, and then we kind of either forgot or got shut down or both. And then it was kind of hard because the brewer doesn't have their logs with them, and they're not prepared, or it's from memory, and it just is kind of weird. So, but I think you're the first person that I know about who's asked to bring it back. So maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
Maybe
that would take some planning ahead of time.
That really would. Thank you for all you do. I just signed up to be a recurring donor to avoid just giving a verbal tip. Oh, I get it. Like a compliment is a verbal tip.
Oh. All right. Well, thank you.
I'm not down with the Gilroy lingo, Jason, but I appreciate it, man. Thank you for the nice words.
Yeah.
The last one is from Matt. He says, "Hi, JP, Tasty, Bevo, maybe Doc. Oh, and I guess Beardy. I got a new fancy conical fermenter, and I was just wondering about if and when I should dump the trube. I figure it's a feature of the thingy I spent a lot of money on, so I might as well give it a try. What do you suggest? Does it even matter?"
Yes, but it depends. It depends on what style of beer you're brewing. To me, I'm new to a small homebrew conical, relatively, and so I was trying it very frequently, and In ales and stuff like that, if you're not doing a ton of hops, I don't think it's necessarily that important to do.
Okay.
I would say if you're doing something that has a lot of, like if you're going to do a lot of dry hopping or even a lot of hops in the kettle and some of that makes it through, it'd be worth doing after primary fermentation is done. And then if you're doing something where you're lagering or there's long-term storage, dumping off periodically during the storage phase is worthwhile, just to prevent autolysis and stuff like that.
Okay.
But you're not going to get a ton. It's real easy to punch through the bottom with an inch and a half valve on it with a 10-gallon amount of yeast sitting in the bottom.
What do you mean punch through the bottom?
Like if you just open that valve too quickly, you'll just knock out the slug that's sitting right above the valve and leave what's kind of piled up at the edges of the cone. So you want
to do it gradually.
Yeah, crack it very slowly. Kind of keep an eye on the consistency of what's coming out.
What do you do dumping your trube, Tasty? Same thing?
Well,
treat it slowly?
I do a unit tank. Well, what I typically do, and it's probably it's become part of my process, actually, too. I don't pitch till the next day.
Yeah.
So the trube that would come from anything that would come from the kettle is already settled into the bottom. So before I pitch my yeast, I dump all that.
Okay.
Of course, that is kind of a loose not very well formed, but you just kind of go by color.
Yeah.
You know, and then I make like an extra half a gallon or maybe even a gallon more of wort just for that drop.
Okay, so you account for it.
Oh man, I'm going to I take a gallon jug down there, hook it up to the bottom of my conical, and just let it go. I don't care how if I do extra or not.
Yeah,
because my pitch is really made for the net wort that's there.
Right.
After that, the only time I'll drop trub is when I go to dry hop. I'll drop dead yeast and stuff like that.
Okay. But, yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, you know, I really. Of course, in lagers, I have to definitely have to wait overnight before I pitch because it's not. Because I pitch cold.
Yeah.
And that's when I really like the idea of doing it the most. Because it's cold overnight. It's like 50 degrees in the morning. It is sort of more compact and more of it there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to get that out of a lager because a lager has typically fewer places for the effects of krub to hide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you need some in there for the yeast health, but that you can. Yeah.
You're probably fine.
Just what sticks on the sides would be plenty for that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess I do the same thing. When I use the conical, I would dump before I kegged.
Yeah.
I'd pull some out, cold crash it. And then, after it stopped fermenting, I would drop some of that out too. But maybe I did it too soon because I just like fucking with shit. You know what I mean? I like watching the Play-Doh kind of ooze out of the hole kind of thing. You know what I mean? And it felt cool. I felt like a brewer.
It's hard to do it too soon. Once your yeast is active fermentation, you have enough yeast in suspension to do the beer. You don't need anything that is on the bottom waiting to come in.
Yeah.
You can drop all that early on if you want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that sounds great. I hope that helped, whatever your name was. I appreciate that.
Your email is very important to us.
Yes, thank you very much. Today on the show, we have Mike from Full Circle Brewing up in Fresno. And he brought three beers. He brought some growlers for us to try. So we're gonna get in with Mike here in a little bit. We do have a Twitter game. Oh, okay. Warren sent me a note, but then I had to explain the pause. So now I'm just saying that you sent me a note.
It would have been so much better.
It would have been better. It definitely would have been better. But that was my
fault. Now it's fine.
Warren, why are you calling me?
I didn't.
You're calling me right now.
Oh.
Hello.
Hey, Jason.
Oh. Yeah.
Let's do the Twitter game after the break.
Who is this?
This is Warren.
Warren, I'm on the fucking radio. Warren, what do you want?
Oh, you're doing a show right now?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'll talk to you later.
God damn. Wow. No, I'm actually really getting a phone call now. Whatever.
That was a real phone call, apparently.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was like, what's happening right now? Okay, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to be here with Mike from Full Circle Brewing Company. It's The Session. Hang out. Grab a beer. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Are you a member of the White Labs Customer Club? If not, you should be. It's the easiest way to earn free stuff for turning in your old homebrew labels from either Vials or Pure Pitch. All you have to do is save your labels and redeem them for things like free yeast, an exclusive White Labs t-shirt or sweatshirt, and even the opportunity to brew with the yeast man himself, Chris White. Signing up is easy. Just go to whitelabs.com/customer club, fill out the registration form, and then mail in your labels. They will return the favor by sending you awesome White Labs swag. Go sign up today at whitelabs.com/customer club. White Labs, pure yeast and fermentation since 1995.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer?
They make beer.
Watch out! Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can. Featuring...
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of...
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to MoreBeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Marin Brewing Company in Northern California has been making award-winning beers for more than 25 freaking years. Today, I want to tell you about their new 12-ounce cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale. The good stuff, Mount Tam is bright gold, 5.5% ABV to keep you feeling good, and has been winning awards since 1989. If you're visiting the Bay Area, get your butt out to Marin Brewing Company. They pour tasty beers and serve great food every day until midnight. Come in for a tour, stay for the food, and pick up a six-pack of cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale to enjoy at home, camping, biking, or whatever the hell you do. Owner Brendan Moylan has this to say about Marin Brewing beers.
It's freaking awesome.
Marin Brewing has won more than 100 gold medals in international competitions. Check out marinbrewing.com for all their award-winning beers, food, and merch. Marin Brewing Company in Larkspur, California. Award-winning taste, refreshing finish. It's freaking awesome.
This is Corey King from Side Project Brewing, and you're listening to The Session on The Brewing Network.
There's murder all around you, on the streets and in the skies.
All right, thanks for hanging out, everybody. I wonder if this this music comes with free razor blades.
Yeah. Nothing but good music here on Positive Monday.
That's why I'm positive that... Yeah. And this is some emo, I don't know what I'm doing. But I do want to tell you guys about Great Fermentations. They're doing a giveaway. They're giving away free homebrew ingredients for 15 years. I repeat, for 15 years, and a Blickman Brew Easy all-grain brewing system. Just go to greatfermentations.com/giveaway and enter for your chance to win. It's a huge prize, over a $10,000 retail value. Compliments of Great Fermentation. The grand prize announcement will be on Saturday, June 17th. Also, and also is in all caps, Warren, I want to let you know that.
Oh, wow.
All caps, so it's very important.
And then?
Or the kids say it's V important.
Oh, is that what the kids say?
They don't even say very anymore. It's V.
V-I?
V important.
Vi.
Beverly,
what do you
up.
Know about kids?
Right. Also, they're doing a random giveaways every 2 weeks leading up to the close of the competition. Items include conical fermenters, temperature controllers, the new Blickman Riptide brewing pump, and more. As always, you'll get top-notch customer service, same-day shipping on many items. GreatFermentations.com/giveaway. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook at GR8 Fermentation. You can find them on Instagram and Twitter as well. Great Fermentations. riptide.com.
Speaking of the Riptide, you should have gotten John Blickman to send you one of those things.
Dude, I know.
And carbonate in a loop right there.
Is that what it does?
I think that's what it does, right?
It's by Riptide. That's it.
Oh, that might not be what I'm thinking of.
I think the product you're thinking about has a name that sort of indicates that.
Oh, okay.
Warren.
This sounds like a real pump.
Well, whatever what I'm thinking of is called, you should get that.
Mike, have you done any radio before? Because I'm looking for a replacement for Warren, if that's all right.
I've done a couple of podcasts.
Before we get to Mike, let's go for the Twitter game, Warren.
So I've got that figured out.
Hold on a second. The Twitter game is brought to you today by our good people at the Wine and Hop Shop. Go to thewineandhopshop.com. Get some stuff. All right.
So since now that the brew pub's been open for 6 months or so, I've been spending an unusual amount of time on the various review platforms like Untappd and Yelp.
Yeah.
And I've been seeing...
Why would you do that?
Well, I've come to find that it's a very good source of entertainment. I've gotten a lot of laughs.
You can laugh. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I totally do not take it seriously.
Running into brewers crying, and I go, like, what are you taking this so seriously for?
It makes me laugh.
Are you lolling?
Yes, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, straight up, like, not laughing out loud, but lolling, which is very different.
Well, what, like, R-O-L-F?
Ruffle.
Lolling. Yeah.
Ruffling?
Yeah.
Are you ruffling?
I haven't ruffled, but I've lolled.
You don't strike me as a ruffler.
No, especially from the bar stool that I typically sit in. I'm not going to fall on the ground that
far. That's a long drop.
That's a long drop.
Just to make a point of how funny something is?
Yeah.
Right!
Oh, this is so stupid.
I'm rolling.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, go ahead.
I was wondering, if the Brewing Network happened to be on Yelp, what would some of our top review highlights be?
Oh, geez. Like, that's a good one, Warren.
What would a Yelp review be of the Brewing Network?
Yeah. Of not the bar, but the actual radio station.
Yes,
yeah.
The podcast. Yeah. The station here.
That's a good one. Because we have, like, iTunes reviews.
But, we do?
Yeah, but those are very different. I feel like the people who review shit on iTunes are very different people than review shit on Yelp. They're less petty.
Okay.
iTunes
is less petty.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like people on Yelp are, I don't know, amateur food critics.
Right. Even amateur spellers, some of them.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see what we would get on Yelp.
What we get on Yelp. Okay. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. We'll find out.
Will we be Zagat rated? Nobody knows. Okay, I'm sitting here with Mike Sumaya, right?
I got that right. Yeah.
Okay. Head brewer at Full Circle Brewing in Fresno. Thanks for coming out, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah, we appreciate you coming out. Fresno's kind of it's not close. It's not real far, but it's a haul, right?
It's
a couple
close
hours.
Enough to make it back tonight and still get to work tomorrow.
they're not going to give you like a couple hours extra, like, hey, you were out promoting. It's a long journey. You might have to stay overnight or whatever.
Yeah, no, the youths don't take vacations.
Yeah. Hear that, Marshall? We have a guest from Fresno.
Right. Yeah, Mark.
Mr. Brewlosophy.
Yeah, that guy, whatever. So how long have you been at this gig, man?
Full Circle, we basically the new owners, and I'm kind of part of the new lineup at Full Circle. We basically take over late July, early August.
Oh, okay.
Before that, the previous brewer or owners had owned it since 2000. That's when it came out. And so that's really the oldest running still of the same name brewery in town.
I was going to ask, did you guys change the name? But you kept the name. It had a good enough brand, and you're all right.
Yeah, we kept the name, but we did change the logo up completely from start to finish because we did want to kind of blend the new and the old, and the logo kind of does that. Brings the new ideas to the table, but we still want to maintain the presence that Full Circle's had for the past 16 years in downtown Fresno.
How did everybody respond to that? Did you get some weird looks, or were people embracing the new changes you guys were making?
Oh, overwhelmingly positive.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was so excited because the place has kind of flown under the radar for a long while, and was kind of just a good old boys kind of hangout. Like the people that hung out there, they knew about it, but the large part of Fresno had no idea it even existed.
Really?
And so to kind of take all of that and all the history that they've had for all the regulars, they're still our regulars now. They're still coming in.
Oh, great.
Getting their mugs filled, you know, pretty much every day. And
yeah, I feel like that's a mark of like you're hitting home with the community, is if the regulars are still coming in and they're loving it even more. That's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's cool to have those guys and then also see just so many new faces and so many people that tell us that they had no idea that the place even existed, or that yeah. they had been in there a few years ago, and they were like, yeah, it was all right, but now that there's new owners and, you know, new brews and everything coming out, that's completely changed what they had before.
Yeah.
We're getting just all kinds of positive feedback from the community, which is just great.
I mean, awesome.
Yeah, we can't ask for anything more to have so much support from the people and have so many other breweries that are popping up at the same time in the same area and be part of that, like kind of leading the charge and making downtown Fresno a place for craft beer, kind of a craft beer destination.
Yeah. Are you getting a lot of breweries opening up in Fresno now?
Yeah. I mean, there's Tioga Sequoia has been there since, I believe, 2011.
Okay.
I said Full Circle has been there since 2000, but kind of flying under the radar, and now yeah. we're making it more public. There's House of Pendragon out of Sanger. Mm-hmm. They're opening another spot down there in downtown, just right around the corner from Tioga.
Okay.
There's Border Hop Brewing that's going across the street from Tioga. There's 411 Broadway, which is kind of down the street and across the street from Tioga.
Jeez.
And we're a quarter mile away from Tioga, so
okay.
we're not that far away. And there's a friend of mine, Steven Zach, who's a home brewer that's looking to start his own place. He's looking at downtown. There's a whole lot of momentum wow. behind downtown to really make it a, like I said, a craft beer destination, where before there was Tioga and Full Circle, and Full Circle was kind of not really anything worth
just hanging
to.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so to go from two breweries downtown to almost half a dozen in really just the next year, a lot of these guys are planning on opening up. It's really, there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of momentum behind downtown.
How big is the downtown area?
In what way?
Like, I don't like block, how like many blocks long or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to figure out the radius that you guys are all fitting into.
All the breweries are going into a walking distance kind of area.
Okay.
Like within a mile.
Of okay.
Just kind of radius, I guess.
That's really cool. I like hearing that for some reason. I don't know why.
And downtown Fresno has been kind of struggling to find its place to. There's been a lot of people behind revitalizing downtown Fresno because it's really kind of lagged behind a lot of other big cities in Fresno. And you know, we're the fifth largest city in California, and to not have a thriving downtown to a lot of people has really been the missing part of the puzzle.
Right.
And to have something like craft beer to be able to kind of spark this whole revitalization of downtown, and like I said, to be on the cutting edge of that and be supportive of all the other breweries that are coming out, because places like Tioga and Pendragon have been supportive of other breweries, and it's great to follow in that and follow in their footsteps and kind of be part of that rising tide that's lifting all the boats. Because to all of us downtown, the more breweries that are there, the better.
Yeah,
it gives so much more reason for people to stop in and do a pub crawl.
Are you sure that I mean, because I don't know, if it were me, I would be insanely jealous of everybody moving in, and I would try to like throw pig's blood down their fucking fermenters or something like that. Like I would put a hex on them. I wouldn't want them in my playground. But I'm not a very good sharer, so I'm an only child. So
I'm amazed that you said Fresno is the fifth biggest city in California.
Yeah,
I would not have guessed that. Well, I wouldn't even put it in the top 10.
Yeah, I don't know much about Fresno. Guessed. Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of flyover country as far as California goes.
It's drive.
If it's the fifth biggest, they could probably afford to have a few more than six breweries.
Yeah, and I like
look
that
at San Diego.
Right. Yeah, I like
way
that they're walking distance era. I mean, you guys are going to have some great beer tourism. I mean, it sounds like you probably already do, but that's only going to grow and grow.
Yeah, that's the main thing is getting that beer tourism going, because that's just only going to help downtown.
Well,
get even better.
And I saw on I think it was Mitch Steele's Facebook page or whatever. I don't know. There was a conversation about like millennials. Yeah, I name dropped. So what?
I read Mitch's like my beer Facebook one time, page. Also,
I've dropped that name a few times.
Yeah. Oh,
he said he liked my beer.
Nice. About
he's
like
bullshitting.
Well, he's a big fat liar. He says he likes his radio station too, so yeah. I know he's lying. We were talking about like target millennials and how targeting millennials for breweries is kind of different than it used to be for like baby boomers or Gen X or whatever, because millennials are kind of they're not brand specific anymore. They're kind of, they kind of embrace a few brands at a time. Mm-hmm. And so you get that kind of, you know, they jump between three or four brands, where I think in the 90s or 2000s, maybe Tasty, when, you know,
well, there aren't that many options. That, now there's so many options. You're almost forced to.
Yeah. And so you, right, right.
And every week there's a brand new brewery that you want to love. So you can't,
yeah,
you know, so.
And I think it was easier in the early 2000s, late 90s, to target people and, you know, that's my brand.
Yeah.
But now you don't.
Was Sierra or Stone or something.
Nobody says that anymore. Nobody says that. They go, oh, I love Fieldwork and I love Gilman and I love, you know, Sierra Nevada and I love the. And you don't have one person. So I think places like that, like a beer destination, friggin' bullseye. Yeah.
Well, you can try the two guys and you can go out to Tailgate at the same time.
And it's okay. Yeah. You're not cheating on anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you are. I don't know. How did you get this gig? Well, you were a homebrewer first, right?
Yeah, so I started off homebrewing and doing that for really not too long and just finding just had a knack for it. I've always been pretty good at science and chemistry and all that stuff. And
I suck at it.
That's basically what beer is. As I tell people, it's organic biochemistry. And
yeah. See, so, I'm already lost. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, it's too many syllables.
Big word.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I say it's controlled food spoilage. Because you're adding fungus to sugary liquid. Like, oh, I don't want any more of this.
It's so weird. So were you like winning awards, or did you even not go that route? People just liked your beer.
Yeah, it was more of just I was in the position to, like, I want to actually do this for a living. It wasn't like some of the guys out there, they got really well-paying jobs, and to leave that to go to
like
not make
engineers
anything.
Engineers and shit, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really have that, and so it was kind of a bit of a freedom to be able to be like, you know, this is really freaking cool, and I've got a pretty decent talent at it, and might as well try to get my foot in the door. And applied a lot of different places, and just happened to be in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people to get in at Riley's Brewing out in Madera.
Okay.
And started out as a sales rep for them, and kept bringing them my home brews, and you know, this is the kind of stuff we need to be doing. We need to shake it up, because they hadn't really had anything new for a couple of years by the time I'd taken a sales position.
Like what? What were you bringing them that they weren't doing?
Pretty much anything that was out of the ordinary, because they had a English pale ale, they had a blonde ale, they had an IPA. It was just kind of the standard offerings,
okay,
which, you know, 20 years ago it might have been okay to get by with that, but now
that, like, sounds like a perfect late 90s target.
Yeah, yeah. And so now it's like there's so many other brands out there that you have to stay relevant. And kept bringing in just anything out of the ordinary, mostly IPAs. I'm a hophead, and so I love that. But kind of bringing their IPAs to, you know, modern times, about how much we're hopping and what kinds of hops we're using.
Yeah.
But then also just doing, you know, seasonal releases that before that at that point they hadn't really done that. They did one dark ale for fall winter seasonal, and that was pretty much it.
Okay.
So
was it also stuff that you were seeing kind of in the marketplace? That you're like, hey, people are asking for these certain styles of beers or whatever?
Yeah, because I've always kind of seen myself as, I'm in the industry, but I'm still a consumer. And I still see stuff from the other side of the bar of the stuff that I just want from breweries, that, you know, stuff that I expect out of modern breweries. And so it was a lot of that. And eventually they moved me into assistant brewer in the brewery and had somebody else do the sales, which to me was a good thing, because I only really took the sales job just to get my foot in the door. I really, it's not my, not my forte, but being in the back in the brewery where nobody sees me or talks to me, that's where I really shine.
That's where you thrive.
Yeah.
With the brewery troll.
Yeah. Just leave me alone.
For sure. And you were able to kind of, you know, exert your influence over the beer styles and the recipes and
pretty much
a little bit.
Yeah. Pretty much all the new stuff that they came out was, it was either completely me or mostly me, with the head brewer kind of putting his two cents in there, but he was kind of you know, I like English styles, and, you know, that's cool to a certain point, but just being on the West Coast, you'd put out a pale ale, people expect a West Coast pale ale.
Yeah.
And our pale ale over there at Riley's was English, and so it's just not quite what people are looking for these days anymore. And just kept coming to them with that, you know, we need to do some new stuff. So we did we took their blonde ale and add pineapple and mango to it and made it something completely different than whatever it was before. People really loved that. Did a milk stout, an imperial stout, an Irish red, lots of different stuff that. previously never done.
Yeah, and stuff that seems like a no-brainer to any. I mean, you go to any brewery's website, and at least one of those styles is going to probably be on the menu at some point.
Yeah,
you know, at least with a seasonal or something like that. Like everybody and their mom has done an Irish Red Ale, right?
Yeah, it wasn't even that yeah. super experimental, even though that's really where I was trying to pull them to. Is that mm-hmm. that's really where I come from. So after a couple of years doing that with Riley's, was really just looking to do something really smaller. Mm-hmm. They have a 20-barrel brew house over there with 40-barrel fermenters.
Wow.
They're doing double batches mm-hmm. a lot of times.
Wow, that sounds like they're still moving beers, even though they're kind of brewing these older styles.
Yeah, and that's where I think a lot of that has to do with the market, because Fresno really is still kind of behind the ball on what a lot of other big metro places are. You'd think being the fifth biggest
right.
city in California, we'd be a little closer to what the market is like in San Diego or L.A. Yeah. or San Francisco or Sacramento.
They're still drinking IPAs with crystal malts, for God's sake.
Yeah. There's still probably a lot of that.
The good
yeah.
old days.
But there's a really thriving craft beer scene in Fresno, and that's part of what's so exciting to be part of it is there's a lot of beer geeks out there that are getting their hazy IPAs from field work and from Alchemist and Treehouse and doing trades and kind of trying to one up each other on what kind of whales they can bring home.
Right.
We don't really get a whole hell of a lot of those things out there. And
okay.
And that's where I kind of find myself now doing stuff like this Casa de Fulton IPA that we have now and our Juicy IPA that we did when it was the fourth batch that we did. The kind of IPAs that I couldn't really do at Riley's, just being just a production brewery with no tap room and not being able to do those really small batch experimental things.
Yeah, you wanted to
put them out there
to kind of be more like you were as a home brewer.
Exactly.
You want to do some weird shit and put it over the counter and see if people like it, or even if they don't, you got to flex your brewing muscles a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's just taking the passion and the fun of doing it in my garage and just doing it for a living and being able to legally sell it to people.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, I traded it always,
right.
if anybody's yeah. listening, always yes. for trade.
I gave them beer, and then they gave me money. It's completely unrelated.
Yeah. Hey, I found this 20.
Huh.
I'll trade it for you, for the thing.
So, yeah, I found there's a Central Valley Craft Beer Drinkers Facebook group. That
okay.
There's a couple, a few thousand subscribers on that. And just one day I happened to see... somebody I had never seen on that group, like, you know, pretty familiar with the people that regularly post on there. Just some stranger. Hey, anybody looking for a head brewer position, let me know. And that was the entire post. I'm like, hey, who the hell is this?
That sounds like Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, so is this some new brewery I haven't heard of? Because, you know, I generally kind of pick up the chatter around what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be this guy who was an accountant and happened to purchase a Full Circle with his accountant. Kind of partner. And that's where I got started there, is meeting up with them and seeing what they were going with. And like I said, I had no idea what brewery he was associated with. And he told me, oh, it was Full Circle Brewing.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what you're getting into, right? Because the Full Circle, like,
did
all the guys.
That?
Oh, yeah.
No,
I mean, I'm very much up front with them.
Yeah.
I mean, to be completely honest, the place has not had that best of reputation
yeah.
the past few years. It had a really good reputation back in the early 2000s. They switched brewers, and the quality of the beer was really hit or miss. And that was the most consistent thing that we heard, was that it was really inconsistent.
Hmm.
And going through, before I really signed on with them, just going through the brew house and just saying, nope, 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 nope. This is all wrong. We're changing all of this. If I'm taking this job, we're getting new heat exchanger. We're getting new fermenters. We're getting new hoses.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you were just checking out the equipment. You're like, that's kind of broken. We need to update some stuff in here.
I could see where their issues would come from.
Okay.
Just the equipment alone. You look at the welds on their DIY heat exchanger, and
yeah.
it's just messy as all hell.
Okay.
And I could see, like, that's where your contamination is coming from the very start, and then they would just repitch on top of old contaminated yeast cakes. And
oh, man.
It'd just be bad beer after bad beer.
That's too bad.
And It was just stuff that I could see just going through, and it's what I kind of set up with the new owners is being like, you know, if I'm going to leave what I got going at Riley's, which, you know, I wasn't 100% happy, but I was still happy being there. I was still making beer and having fun with it. But I did want to downsize, but I didn't want to downsize
quality side.
I didn't want to downsize the quality and be to where it really doesn't have anything to do with me or my skills. It has to do with the equipment that's there.
Yeah.
And so I basically set it up with them. I was like, you know, we're going to need all this new cold side stuff. And that's what they got for me, to where if a batch comes screwed up, that's my fault. At least I know there's something there I can fix to where it's in my control.
Yeah.
How did they take that when they just bought this new business and you come in and be like, okay, yeah, it's cool, I'll work here, but you have to replace half of it.
That's pretty much
the and the other half sucks.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of in, they were in the midst of buying the place. And the owner's done a few extract batches, but, you know, it was really, really casual home brewer kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the only other person involved in the business that has any kind of experience whatsoever in the beer. And so they really took to heart what I was telling them, which meant a lot to me because it was coming from my heart of all the reason, even if I wasn't going to take the job, like you need to replace this stuff regardless. Whoever comes in here, they're going to need at least acceptable equipment to be able to make consistent product.
Yeah, and just so they know to get ready to write a big ass check or two.
Yeah.
And lower the price that they're offering. I mean,
right. Well, that's also true, right? Yeah.
And so that's what they did, is we got a couple of 7-barrel Apex fermenters, conical unit tanks with Thiokol jackets and everything, toward before what they're working on and what we're still working with as well, because we kind of updated them. We're some 7-barrel horizontal fermenters from some dairy auction that the previous owners, the brewers, were just auction hounds. So pretty much 90% of that brewery was built off of stuff they got from auctions. Like our glass doors and windows and stuff going into the brew house was from some casino that went belly up. I just happened to just jump on it and, you know, $500, and there's this whole glass window and door set up.
How many sad, broke eyes have stared at those windows?
Defeated people pushed through those doors. Yeah.
These dairy tanks, I assume they weren't jacketed?
No, they're not jacketed. They're really, really thin steel, to where one of them actually has got some pretty good dents on the end from just crashing it and just
it's like compressing, like folding in on itself.
Yeah.
Really?
And there were some of them where I guess they were transferring the beer out of and they forgot to open the CO2 in, and sucking the beer out and just started kind of imploding the tanks. So
which happens.
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah, I've seen it happen a couple of times.
I've seen it on YouTube sometimes. Yeah,
yeah, those are always the best, man. I just look at those people and I'm like, God, I'm glad I never tried to do that shit, because that would be me on a consistent basis. I would have done it more times than just that.
Yeah, there's been some times where I try to maintain pressure on it while I'm crashing it, but there's been some times where, you know, overnight, you know, it crashes another few degrees and I'm running CO2 in there and just
You can hear it like expanding again.
Just the middle, just popping back out, and just I'm hiding behind like 3 fermenters, waiting for it to explode.
So if it's that thin of metal, what kind of pressure do you put on it?
I've been trying to just keep positive. I still keep the blow off going into a bucket, and I just run the CO2 in there until it starts bubbling, and then shut it off, and try to go in there every few hours and just make sure it's at least positive.
Okay. So just enough to not collapse.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah, just riding that thin line.
That's crazy.
But yeah, there's just in a little cold box that I had to upgrade the insulation on that, because they just had 1-inch thick of foam insulation, and it's like, that's not going to work. So I beefed it up to 4 inches all around, put a cool bot with an AC unit in there, and actually gets the beer down to about 38, which I was surprised that they actually got it below 40.
Well, that's cool.
Even in a Fresno summer?
Yeah, I was going to say.
It has not been the summer since we've used it yet. So, I don't have much faith in the summertime that it's going to get that cold. But that's why we just got another 7-barrel and a 15-barrel conical. So now we got 3 7-barrel conicals, a 15-barrel conical, and those 2 horizontal 7-barrel fermenters.
Nice.
So we've got almost 50 barrels worth of fermentation space.
Yeah.
Just got a couple of pallets worth of kegs to have somewhere to put them in there, because we only got 6 serving tanks that we feed the taps directly from. And so if all those tanks are full, I've got all these batches of beer, they got to go somewhere. So we've got another additional cold box. We've got some more kegs. And it's just almost every other week we're making some other big purchase and just keep going up and up.
Great.
Nice. The reception that we've had locally with the community and the amount of beer that we're selling.
It's got to be good.
It's all been up and up. And
yeah.
And I keep telling them, like, this is the slow part of the year. This is the slow part of the season. Mm-hmm. It's only going to get worse when it gets into summer. And
right.
I'm not sure how I'm going to be able to keep up just with how it's been so far during the cold time.
Yeah.
When it warms up and gets to 100 plus, you know, typical Fresno summers.
Right, right.
There's going to be a hell of a lot more people, a lot more thirsty people in there.
Well, that's a good problem to have, man. That's great.
That's what we got.
Problem nonetheless. Is there any extra capacity around the area that you could maybe have, like a flagship beer contract brew to help you out there?
I'm not sure about immediately in Fresno. I know that Tembler is contract brewing for Tioga's Golden 99 because they can't keep up with that.
So you think that's
what
they're
doing? Sure. So I think if they're contract brewing out to Tembler, then we would have to do the same because obviously Tioga doesn't have the capacity. And
well, it goes up and down. Sometimes they might because you need a smaller quantity.
Right,
you don't need a big batch.
Talking with the owner, right now it's just in draft, and, you know, growlers, the half growlers. That's about all we got right now.
You don't have any distribution in the taps elsewhere in the area, or
we do have a sales guy, Skip, that's doing the outside sales for us to get kegs in there. But right as at this point, we're not packaging into cans or bottles.
Right.
But just talking with Arthur, the owner, this morning, he seems to have his heart set on doing cans and only cans.
Yeah.
And that's part
that's
of
the
what
big thing, man.
That's what I've been trying to convince him is that it's kind of the new thing.
Yeah.
And in the valley, you talk to the big distributors, they say the cans really don't move. But I think a part of it has to be with Fresno is still a little bit behind the curve and hasn't really picked up on how craft beer is doing well in cans now. And so to be the first one or the only one in Fresno to do all cans, I think, is a big push towards getting people to get on that boat and realize that you can have good beer in cans now. It's not what it used to be.
Right, right. Yeah, that is the big push. A lot of people are doing. I see every week it seems like there's someone in my news feed on Facebook posting about this new brewery with cans or whatever.
Yeah,
a lot of that's because of the remote canning people. Are they available to you in Fresno?
That's one of the things that we're looking at is doing either mobile canner, maybe doing that for a short time, and then getting our own canning system, starting pretty small, and just kind of building it up from there. One of the things that the owner was telling me is, as he's looking on Pro Brewer for looking for used can systems. Basically, they're selling at the same price, if not more, than a brand new system. Is that you get it right then? If you get a new system, you're looking at 16 weeks turnaround time.
Yeah, but you waited years. You might as well wait 16 weeks.
Yeah, but at the same time, that puts us in the end of July, early August.
Yeah.
That then we're rolling out cans, which is on the downside of the season. And so there's something to be said about trying to get some packaging out when the getting's good.
When the time's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that and you're not sure you're getting enough beer anyway. So, I mean, you might create a problem where you actually don't have enough beer.
Yeah.
For your tap room faucet, which, of course, is criminal.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're looking at is how to balance that out. Because, I worked at Riley's before doing production brewing, but that's not working with a brew pub where we got to keep stuff on tap. And
right.
It's new to all of us, and we're really just kind of feeling it out and figuring it out as we go.
Yeah.
Which definitely leads to sometimes when we're out of our Clusterfugel, our light beer that, you know, 80% of people coming in ask, well, what do you got that's a light beer? And there was a time that we were out of that, but we had our Kentucky Common, which is pretty damn close to a cream ale.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of dark malts to it. And just trying to get people to realize that, just close your eyes, just drink it, and you realize, like, it is really light, easy drinker, just like the Clusterfugel.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that I really enjoy is educating the people out there and bringing those people who would never have even listened to this podcast still be able to enjoy all these beers that I'm putting out that people who do listen to the podcast can also enjoy. And being able to get both of those demographics is pretty important to us because, again, that we don't have this huge craft beer scene there to draw off of all
for
the
sure.
craft beer people.
Yeah, you have to throw the knowledge out and get everybody in your bucket. Speaking of things that people enjoy, the beer in front of us is my nemesis. it's a cloudy IPA. And I see in the notes that you love this beer. You love the style. Like, You're for it.
Yeah.
You're ready for it.
You love it. East Coast?
Yeah.
You're all you complainers.
We finally have someone. So
We're drinking one.
I kind of bash it. Warren and I make fun of it a little bit. What do you love about the New England IPAs? Because I just don't get. For me, it's a visual thing. Mm-hmm. If I can close my eyes and drink it, I would probably really like it. But for me, it's the cloudiness, orange juice kind of thing that it doesn't agree with me. But it's the big fucking hot thing right now, and so you can't ignore the elephant in the room. But tell me why you like it so much. What turns you on about it?
Really, just everything about them. No, I've never really been a huge fan of the really bitter stuff.
Yeah,
as some of the IPAs out there, where it keeps going with bitter, bitter, bitter.
Right? Yeah, it's like they're trying to push that ceiling, and it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah.
That's kind of how it used to be, I guess, in, you know, the kind of the arms race of the IPAs.
Yeah, the IBU race, dude, for sure.
It's completely gone the other way to where we're going for. I've had some of the examples of these beers where it was like there's almost no bitterness.
Uh-huh.
I get more bitterness out of a blonde ale than I do some of these New England IPAs.
How do you call it? How do they call it an IPA then at that point? Like, is that. Because to me, the people who love IPAs are not the people who love New England IPAs, because the people who love IPAs are there for that bitterness and that harshness. But the New England IPA people are, I guess, maybe a subset of them, like lower, that kind of like the hop. Like me, I like session beers, anything under like 5%, I'm all about it. Hops I can take, but if it's too bitter, it's not enjoyable.
Right.
So I'm like in that weird beer drinking spot where I don't have many beers that I can drink, I guess, because I freeze myself out of a lot of options.
Right. Well, what I've found a lot actually being in Fresno market is we've had a lot of people, not only myself being a hop head, like I love hops, not so much the bitterness, but mm-hmm. the flavors,
yeah.
the aromas that you get off of them.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of people, not only on that side of the table, the beer geeks and the beer snobs, that they really love the hoppiness, that all the notes that they're looking for, all of those floral and fruity and just juicy notes, citrusy notes they get off of it. I've had a lot of people at the brew pub say, you know, I really don't like IPAs, but I tried this one and it's so good.
Yeah.
And to be able to get multiple demographics that would otherwise not really settle on a style,
right.
to have a style yeah. that actually makes both the beer geeks and the regular kind of pedestrian beer people that happen to just come in,
yeah,
to be able to give something that appeals to both sides of those is
okay.
To me, really cool. And so the main thing is I love the hell out of them, so I'm trying to brew what it is that I like.
Yeah, yeah,
to
yeah.
Always
for sure.
have on tap.
Well, that's noble, but I mean, at some point, you know, as a business, you want to.
Yeah, well, right, well luckily what I like sells. Happens to line up with what everybody
yeah,
else
yeah,
likes.
So. Right, right.
Well, that's maybe one of the things you like about it, is it does sell.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. It sells, and not only it sells, it's actually gotten us out there, the
oh,
juicy
a little
IPA
bit of like
that
a,
we've had.
Like a brand leader.
Yeah, and mainly just because I think it did come out of left field so much, because
mm-hmm. yeah.
Full Circle's been known for anything
yeah,
like that, anything cutting edge.
Yeah.
They've been very traditional, doing, you know, an old London porter, mm-hmm. or doing a, you know, traditional cream ale, something like that. But yeah, we do some of that, but still, is to do the new styles that, again, all the beer geeks are after.
Yeah.
But the regular people that had never even known that Full Circle existed for the past 16 years, they come in there and they try this. They're like, "Wow, this is actually really good. I can really enjoy this." And to me, that then opens their palates up to go try other breweries' IPAs.
I can see that. I can see that. So I haven't tried it yet, but smelling it, it smells really, really good.
Yeah, we got a lot of Simcoe, Eldorado, and Mosaic in the dry hop on this one.
And it smells great. It smells like opening a hop bag. I know we kind of like overuse that analogy, but it does. It smells very. This is going to sound really dumb, but like, you know, when it's like using whole hops and at the end, like all the kind of little crushed up little bits and whatever, that's what it smells like particulate,
right?
Not just like a whole flower. There's more to it. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Right. This is
the cloudiest beer I've ever had. That doesn't have the word hefe in it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little nervous. Like I've had some of the West Coast NE IPAs before. Mm-hmm. But like from field work, where they're cloudy, I wouldn't never call them hazy, or you know what I mean. They downright
yeah,
like
quite
murky,
opaque, yeah.
Right? Bev, what camera is on?
Right, we need proof.
Is it
of
mine?
This. Does he need to turn around and look?
It's
into
mine.
The
look at that. I mean, look at that. Look at that fucking beer.
It's opaque. That so is. We use a lot of.
So what causes that haze?
I'm not entirely 100% sure, but what I've been doing things. On...
I'm going to drink it.
Protein, well, polyphenols, or yeast.
So, yeah. So this one, Casa de Fulton Street, I made a little more, I guess, closer to New England, what kind of expecting, in that I used oats and wheat, you know, quite a bit more okay. than I use in Juicy.
So you're up in the also protein.
Used, yeah, also use the Vermont yeast. On this one, I used the higher chloride to sulfate ratio, yep. whereas on our the other one that the first one we made at Juicy, which is the one that really made a splash for us, I used some wheat, maybe like 10% wheat, but not that much. I used some Munich in there, a little bit of honey malt. Still used a Vermont yeast, but the Juicy IPA still had my about 175 or so sulfate to about 50 chloride. So it was kind of splitting the difference because I knew that the people, the drinking public in Fresno, they haven't had the real soft, pillowy New England IPAs.
Right. And that's what your additions were doing, is trying to soften that water?
Well, on this one, yeah.
Now okay. they do.
Oh, yeah, on okay. this one, right. definitely I tried to make it different from Juicy in that it's very much a softer water profile.
Okay.
And then also, like I said, using the malted oats and the white wheat malt in there. So what I'm kind of leaning towards was causing all the haziness is the Vermont yeast, of course. It likes to kind of stay in solution pretty much forever, as far as I've told. Like, I can tell. I've only gone like 4 or 5 weeks on a batch that it didn't clear all the way down to the end in the serving tank.
Are you saying that's yeast in suspension, or is that just the polyphenols that are left over from the
It's probably the a combination. It's just that...
Well, like when your beer, like this beer, when it's... So you go into the pub in the morning and you pull the first pint. Is it more? Is it cloudier than the 10th pint?
It actually looks pretty damn consistent.
Well, then it's not yeast. It's because polyphenols will stay stratified in solution. Yeast will drop out.
It's probably more of that.
Well, that's a success as far as I'm concerned.
How do you get the polyphenols?
Well, that's if you listen to Marshall Schott. I could call it. He could come up. He could tell us again about this process. But basically,
it's
dry hopping and during active fermentation where it creates this permanent bond with the polyphenols from the hops.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, is because I've done the same thing on our Killwood IPA, which I use Cal Ale equivalent yeast on there, and I dry hopped it before fermentation was fully done, and it cleared up a little bit compared to the ones I've used Vermont on, but. It's still they've never gone fully clear even after 4, 5, 6 weeks in the serving tank.
Have you ever tried not doing the hopping schedule but using this yeast and see how hazy it stays?
I've done that only on the most recent batch. I did a wheat ale that I'm just about to add some Oregon fruit, peach and mango puree to.
Okay,
I used the Vermont yeast because I was going for that fruitiness, and it's also supposed to be hazy anyway, so. It's very lightly.
Besides hops.
Okay. But yeah, that one I'm not dry hopping, so it'll be interesting to see how it comes out. But of course, the pectin from the fruit is going to completely screw that experiment
right.
up.
Yeah, right, right.
But still, I look at it now, and it's hazy. It's not nearly like before I dry hop these IPAs. It's definitely not nearly as hazy. Uh-huh. But I do dry hop it with just about 3 pounds per barrel. And I usually try to shoot for about a degree Plato before fermentation when I'm throwing that in.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them on the Juicy, I'll throw in half of the hops on one day and kind of blow off the extra CO2 that's in solution. And then the next day I'll throw the rest of the dry hops in the second half and I'll close the blow off. So that way all of the CO2 that comes out of solution from that actually stays in that tank. And any volatiles that might have been blown out stay in the tank. And I try to naturally carbonate it in that unitank as much as possible.
Okay.
This Casa de Fulton, I put it all in at once and close it all up and completely naturally carbonate. I didn't hit it with the CO2 through the carbstone at all.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Do you add any findings at all?
Not on these. I do use Nalco Biofine on stuff like a Clusterfuggle because it's cream ale. It's supposed to be brilliant, and so that's what I'm shooting for. But on these, no. I dry hop them. Usually about day 5 or 6, depending on how fermentation is going. So where, like I said, it's before fermentation is completely done, before I'm at terminal. And then I dry hop them for maybe 3 or 4 days on the hops, and then I'll cold crash it for maybe 3 days, just until I'm getting very, very few hop, very little hop matter out of the racking arm to where I know I can get a pretty clean transfer into the serving tank. To me, on these guys, it's getting it as into the serving tank and into the pint glass as soon as possible after I dry hop it.
Because
I can just tell, just taking the samples, that it just goes.
It's going down.
It goes down every day. Yeah. So I try to get it as once I dry hop it. That's kind of the countdown is get it into that pint glass as fresh as possible.
Yeah.
To get as much of that aroma and flavor into there as possible.
Yeah. Because a lot of the haze, a lot of the quote good haze, is because there's a lot. If you believe in that sort of thing, is. They're adding a lot of those adjuncts, oats and wheat, to have a huge amount of free protein floating around. Yeah. And then you add the polyphenols from the hops, and a easy way to get haze in beer is have a lot of protein and a lot of polyphenols. Those two combine to make haze. Okay. A lot of finings won't strip out all of that. They just pick one. The finding picks one, either excess protein or polyphenols. If you take out one, you don't get the haze in beer, and you can end up with clear beer without filtering.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why if... Or that's one reason why they add oats and wheat to good New England IPA.
Yeah.
Is to allow stuff there to bind and
to
get
bind
that haze.
Whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And it feels like it's kind of a secondary, I guess, side effect that it does increase that mouthfeel that,
right.
again, goes back to kind of trying to make it as much of fruit juice as possible. While still making sure that it can still be considered a beer,
right? Right,
and that's kind of where we're going for with this is with the oats, the wheat, and that higher chloride to sulfate is to try to get that kind of softer mouthfeel.
Yeah,
while I still like to have a little bit of a bite to it because again, I think that the market is still they want a little bit there.
Yeah,
just kind of baby step them towards it. So I think the next one I do will be even softer and just to kind of work their way towards that and. If people don't like it and they don't like it, well, you know, I'm fine with sticking with this one because this is the kind that I'm loving drinking all the time.
Yeah, well, the bitterness is definitely there, and it's probably a bit more bitterness than I've had in the very limited samples that I've had.
Right.
So you know, whatever. But that I can't get up. That aroma is great. It smells really great. I definitely feel the mouthfeel. I definitely get that kind of like creaminess. I don't know of how I feel about it yet. I'm undecided.
To me,
I think you want to like it. You just don't want to admit it.
He's in denial.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That might be more.
My issue is the mouthfeel and the creaminess and the roundness that everyone seems to like and enjoy about the juicy aspect of it. That I don't like that in an IPA. I want it to. If I'm going to drink one, I want it to be crisp, bitter.
Yeah.
On the thinner side. Still malty, but very thin, sharp, acidic within style. Mm. Not round, thick, creamy, juicy, and then also hoppy.
It is working my salivary glands, I'll tell you that. It is doing that.
Yeah. You're trying to get that pasty thing out of your mouth.
Right. It's trying to rinse the juicy IPA.
My body's rejecting it.
It's fighting it.
It's very clearly a well-made beer.
Yes.
I'm definitely saying
it's a good example of it.
It really is.
Right.
Of the style.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I get,
it's got the classic no-head retention thing.
Yeah. And that tropical fruit thing happening. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's got the nice juice punch. Yeah.
And people are loving this.
Yeah. This is
that's
been,
great.
Next to the Clusterfug with the cream ale, it's our... mainly juicy. This is the one that's just brand new. It just came out last week. But the juicy type of IPAs, people are going nuts for. And Tayugo's putting out a bunch.
They are?
Pendragon's putting out.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, is everybody else like driving by your house, like by your brewery, and like throwing eggs at your window and saying, "Fucking leave it alone! What are you doing, bringing this into our house?"
Yeah, no. Everybody's been behind it.
Because
I think we're just everybody's catching on to the trends as they kind of go. I guess in a bigger sense that Fresno is just kind of starting to catch on to it, you know, for better or for worse, you know, it might be behind the times, but hey, I'm in the right place, the right time.
Exactly. You're in the business of making and selling beer.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to do it. And look, it's a good beer. It's not a style that I like, so I'm going to go on Untappd and rate it a half a star.
Yeah. Right. I hated it.
As long as you give me some feedback, I will take any rating on Untappd. It's when it's half star and says meh.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do with that?
Right. Well, and so, you know,
nobody.
What I love about the rating sites is those people who go, this is not a style I normally drink, but they clearly just wanted to tell people how little they liked it, and it's like a 2-star.
Right.
Well, if it's not something you like, then you don't know the style. If you don't know the style, then shut the fuck up.
Yes.
Check it in. Just don't put a rating.
It's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
No, don't rate it.
It's okay.
Anyway, we're going to take a break here so I can go to the bathroom mainly, and then we're going to come back. We're going to have more beer. From Full Circle. Hang out. We'll be right back, everybody.
listening to the Brewcasters. The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Home Brewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from thebrewingnetwork.com.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, Santa Clean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five-star treatment today.
Are you looking for a simple brewing system that's great for all grain brewing, but everything on the market seems to be full of compromises? Blickman Engineering has the answer. The Blickman Brew Easy All Grain Brewing System. The Brew Easy is a complete system with easy upgrades and a beautiful compact design, perfect for any size brewing location. At its core, the Brew Easy is built on two gorgeous Blickman Boilermaker brew kettles, a high temperature March pump, and either a top tier gas burner or the new boil coil electric heater. The Brew Easy adapter lid allows the pots to stack on top of each other, forming an efficient, strong, and compact brewing setup that comes in 5, 10, and 20-gallon batch sizes. Upgrade your BrewEasy system with full automated control by adding a Blickman Tower of Power temp controller and make moving around easy with the Blickman Kettle Cart. The BrewEasy is modular. If you already own a Boilermaker kettle, you can build your BrewEasy by purchasing just the modules you need. The new BrewEasy all-grain brewing system. See it today at BlickmanEngineering.com and brew with Blickman quality on your new BrewEasy. Easy.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake from Creature Comforts. You're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network. All right, thanks for hanging out, everybody. Before we get back to it, I'm going to shuffle some paper.
Good to do some things.
I'm going to do some things. Go to AdamandEve.com right now, and for a limited time, you'll get 50% off just about any one item. When you select your item at 50% off, you'll also receive three free adult DVDs. Adult DVDs, Mike, I don't know if you're familiar with Adam and Eve, but they've been a good sponsor of the BN for a long time.
Pretty familiar with porn.
Okay, I'm at Adam and Eve. I'm at Adam and Eve right now, so what do I do next?
Well, you get you select one item, and you get 50% off.
Oh.
And then once you do that, you get three free adult DVDs, plus a free exclusive gift, which is back by popular demand.
What?
The Free Power O Vibrating Ring, Morn.
Oh, Power O.
Yeah.
There's some power involved?
Yeah. It's a vibrating ring, and you don't wear it on your finger, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Oh.
You wear it on your thumb.
On my toe?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a toe ring.
Toe ring.
The Free Power O Vibrating Toe Ring.
Perfect for the bedroom.
Yes, that's... Hey, I'm not going to kink shame anybody, dude.
Hey.
Whatever you're into, yeah. That's fine. The old sock. And to top it off, they will even throw in free shipping on that entire order. So, to recap, 50% off almost any one item, three free DVDs, the Power O Vibrating Toe Ring that's not really for your toe, and free shipping. Go to adamandeve.com and use code BNARMY at checkout. That's BNARMY at adamandeve.com.
There's a graphic on here that says... Fill your guy's toolbox, and the picture of the toolbox does not have any of the tools that I have in my toolbox. So I'm not sure if I'm doing it wrong or if they're doing it wrong.
Well, we can ask Candy if you're doing it wrong.
She will most likely say yes.
Yeah, of course she will. What's in? Well, what kind of tools are in there?
Face washer.
it's the stuff Bebo was putting on her lips to make them burn.
What are we talking about now?
Hold on.
Gulf War syndrome or what?
It's like a Clarisonic.
Oh, this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think that's what it's for.
I don't think that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask Sam.
Yeah. It's for the... there's so many things I could say, but I don't want to because...
there are things here.
Like what?
I don't have any in my toolbox.
Do they have names? Like, do you have names for them? Have you even seen them before? Can you see them
I
now?
I recognize them.
But you don't know what they're called.
They sound like things we've described.
Like the jackhammer or a Sydney or something?
Well, there's a pump, some sort of pump.
Some sort of pump.
I'm not sure.
Okay, the penis pump. Probably.
Okay. Well, there's women have a pump too.
They can have it. Yeah. They have a little penis. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Various gasket looking things.
What? It's all about equality. If they can have it, we can have it too.
There's some sort of pink flashlight on here.
It's a fleshlight.
Fuck you, Tasty.
you guys know what these tools are.
Oh.
I know the anatomy parts.
Oh, okay.
Show me the tools, I'll tell you what to do.
That should be your NHC fucking talk.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of
sponsored by adamandeve.com.
There's a thousand dudes sitting there, why not, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of ball bearings on a string.
After you're
they
done,
call them beads
they'll applaud for you. And then you'll be like, okay, thank you very much. You got to leave. And no one will stand up.
No, they can't.
Like, I can't even.
Don't worry, you have 5 minutes.
Stand up in a few minutes.
Yeah. It's 10 minute sustained sitting ovation. Okay, I'm going to slide the NEIPA over, and I'm going to take up this dark beer. What are we drinking here, Mike?
This is our Chinatown Undergrounds, which is our underground Chinatown Imperial Stout made with Lana cold brew coffee.
Okay, is that a local thing or what?
Yeah, Chinatown is basically where our brewery is at. It's maybe a block or two kind of northwest of us. And back in the early 1900s, when a lot of Chinese immigrants were coming into the area, that's where they would all kind of group up, was in Chinatown. And they actually had these tunnels that were going underneath all of these businesses that were all kind of linked together. And
that's kind of cool.
Back in the day, they would use that to basically escape from when the cops would come around to bust their opium dens or whatever stuff that they were doing, because they were just kind of being their own little area.
Right.
But it's really, really fascinating, all the history that's just of that area just in the past 100 years. There's some tours that they'll do down there. And you go down there, and there's a certain part where they're like, okay, everybody turn off all your flashlights and everything, and it's just absolutely pitch black.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool, the history of the area that a lot of people, again, have no idea that it even exists there.
Yeah. You should age some of this down there.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. I really wish that the tunnels went all the way down to our place to where we had an access to there, because, yeah, that would be pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But so we made our underground Chinatown as our base Imperial Stout, and then Lana Coffee Company is, again, maybe three blocks away from us, or kind of between us and Tioga.
Yeah.
We went to them saying that we want to do some kind of coffee beer, and you know, we've got an upcoming Imperial Stout and wanted to kind of mix it with what you've got going on. And so we've got some cold brew concentrate from them that we just added straight to the finished carbonated beer. I basically had it all in a serving tank. And
oh, wow.
I transferred into one of the other clean serving tanks the coffee, and then transferred the half of our Imperial Stout batch on top of that, mm-hmm. mixed it up, and kegged that out, so that way it's all pretty consistent.
So they make
concentrate.
They
make strong coffee, or they actually make coffee and then reduce it?
They make basically a concentrated cold brew, and then akin to proofing it down, kind of water it down for their, because they sell cold brew at Tioga
and they water it down at delivery time.
Right? Yeah, so they kind of water it down. So they make it reconcentrated and then kind of water it down. So we took the stuff that was concentrated, so that way we wouldn't water down the beer so much. But it's
you can make a bigger beer and then kind of plan for the watering down.
Yeah, and so we basically just took the finished product beer and got some of the cold brew concentrate and mixed them together in different ratios, and we kind of settled on like about a 5-to-1 beer to coffee.
Really good. Like the coffee.
Mix it up.
Character. It's fucking great.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's a nice
coffee character.
It's really,
it have
really
chili
good.
Character thing going.
Yeah, yeah, and it blends. It's like it's the coffee, and it kind of blends into the kind of acrid malts of the dark beer, and then kind of mellows out into that malt. It's very flowy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and that's why the owner wanted to make a full batch and just do straight coffee from the start. I was like, well, let's figure out how the beer's going to be to start, because I didn't really have a basis to go off of. I'd made an Imperial Stout at Riley's, but I'm not going to make the same recipe, so I'm going to make a different recipe. And I want to know how the base beer came out, so that way
first,
I could take that to the Lana cold brew guy or a coffee guy and say, this is what we got. Let's get something that's going to complement it rather than try to cram it in there.
Yeah, and so what are they? So then they would look at the blends and maybe roast times and temperatures and try to coax some, like pick a bean, a region, and bring something out of that bean that would match well with your beer. So it's not just like, oh yeah, here's our normal house blend or whatever. Just do whatever you want and go away.
Yeah, I explained it to them that, you know, we got this Imperial Stout that's got a decent amount of roast to it, so I don't want to go super duper roasty and turn off a whole lot of people. I wanted to get a cast a broad net, I guess.
Yeah. So where did he go with it?
He gave us all of his coffee beans come from Thailand. He sources them all from Thailand. But he as he explained it, he had some wet process and honey process coffee, where I guess they keep the outer layer. I think it's mucilage or some specific
the meat,
term.
The berry.
And it gives it a little bit of kind of a softer like sweetness that you normally otherwise wouldn't get.
Okay.
And one of the things I really liked working with Lana and doing this cold brew stuff is that Tioga and Pine and Palm, you know, the other couple of local breweries, they use this coffee, but they use the grounds and then just put it in their secondary.
They dry it.
Yeah.
Coffee.
And ours is, we've been the only one that's used just a straight cold brew. And that's kind of part of some of the research I've done on the homebrew side is what do homebrewers do, and read a lot about using cold brew and how it really just smooths out the roast. Since I already had decent amount of roastiness on the base beer, again, I didn't want to go over the top.
That's what I was going to ask you. With the base beer, had more roast. Would you, now that you have this beer in front of you, would you add more roast to offset the mitigating factor of the coffee on the roast?
No, I like having the base beer with its decent amount of roast, and then kind of having this as kind of an alternate. It really softened the roast.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I mean, it's not hardly there at all. So I don't think.
Yeah, and like on the base beer, I didn't bring that with me, but you taste them side by side, they're almost completely different beers. Mm-hmm. Which
I wonder, and this might not be a viable, this might be really stupid, so feel free to, like, tell me I'm a fucking idiot. But I wonder if it'd be really cool to have the base beer and then have the coffee next to it, and you can kind of add your own.
Yeah.
Mix at the table?
Yeah. Just like, you know, to your own liking or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do that. It's just, like, again, the cold brew that he puts out for sale is basically watered down.
Yeah, so you wouldn't
want to do that. So if we can get the concentrate and let you dose it in there. Yeah,
I don't know. It might be like you can ask for like a you know, the beer with like a double shot, or I don't know.
But
whatever.
Then you're relying on the person to know what they're doing.
Yeah, but
and then
I mean,
if they go too far, are they going to blame you for it?
Sure. Well, yeah.
Then
and
comes
so
the half star untapped.
Right, right. And you guys are thinking of it as the producer. I'm thinking of it as a consumer. Like for me, it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I'm really smart and I know what I'm doing. So there's that.
The level of handsome that's required to mix your own coffee
style. High, dude.
It's pretty high.
Yeah, it's really high. I really like this.
Yeah.
That's very good.
And I do appreciate a little bit of the watering down. I mean, I'm sure that the base beer is very tasty on its own. But I was wondering how you add it. Like, especially, I'm imagining a Fresno summer when it's 100 degrees outside. A Russian Imperial Stout is not going to be my go-to. But you add the coffee.
I don't drink outside in that weather.
Oh, really?
No, I got to stay inside.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't go outside. Adding the coffee would help, and watering it down a little bit in the hot summer night, I might think about it.
For sure.
And especially with the awesome coffee flavors going on here.
Could you see this beer on ice?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I could, too.
Yeah. I tell you, the first coffee beer, maybe it wasn't the first, but it was one of the better coffee beers I had ever had, was Red Hook Double Espresso Stout, or it was like an Imperial Stout, and they did like a double batch of coffee and added it in. And every time we'd done this on the show for umpteen years, and anybody I ever talked to at the homebrew shop, I always go, oh, yeah, I put the grounds right in, or I put the beans right in. Take the coffee and add it. It'll water down a little bit, but you make it double strength, and because doing it like that, it gives you that full coffee thing. It's not just, oh, yeah, I can taste it smells, or it tastes like a ground smell, like freshly ground coffee. Well, that's fine, but I don't drink freshly ground coffee. I actually drink liquid coffee, and that, to me, is what it has more of that richer fullness of an actual cup of coffee.
Like if you dry coffee, like what some people will do is just add the grounds to the secondary.
Yeah.
You get more aroma, but you don't get as much flavor.
You don't get as much flavor.
If you go to make coffee, you take beer out to do it, because it's not water's actually better.
Well, and then you can run into that problem sometimes we've had on the show, even, of that kind of green pepper, green bell pepper thing.
Right.
And this kind of avoids all of that. It's the best of both worlds.
The alcohol does a different extraction than, say, water does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, that's part of what I was shooting for using the cold brew, is that whole kind of homebrew mentality that doing it cold brew, it just smooths out any of that acrid roastiness that you would otherwise get. Like I said, we already had enough roastiness. I didn't need any more roastiness. So
no, not at all.
Something that rolls real smooth, and it was just a perfect complement to the base beer.
Yeah, it's high roast, but it's not overly.
Yeah,
you know, it's I would say it's actually right at that, right there.
The sweet spot.
Yeah, I would never go higher than that. It's great.
What's the ABV of this beer?
Well, it started out 8.8, and from what I calculated, adding in basically diluting it. Five parts to one brings it down to about 8%.
Sure hides all that.
Does not. I have actually been more of a fan of the coffee one than even the base one, because it just seems to just smooth it out. And I'm sure that base beer, after 6 months, a year of sitting in the kegs, will smooth out. But just basically diluting it with cold brew concentrate kind of accelerated that, and then gave it all of those awesome coffee notes that. Tioga had done their Rush Hour coffee beer with Valparaiso, Slow Train, and Lana. And
those are all three coffee
local roasters. Yeah.
Okay.
And
how many fucking coffee? How many businesses do you have that have the same?
Fresno is the fifth biggest town in California.
I don't believe it.
I don't know if you knew that.
You have three coffee roasters.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think Valparaiso is out of Visalia, but it's close enough.
Close enough where you lump it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, we can lump it in.
Okay.
That was kind of one of the I guess, cool things, is that the People's Choice didn't go with Alana. They're like, oh, sweet, well, then we can use it, because we didn't want to use the same roasters as the place that's a quarter mile away from us.
No, like, you don't want to do that.
We don't want to be chasing after everything they do. We want to make our own presence.
Yeah.
So a lot of the feedback that I heard off of the Rush Hour with Lana.
Some would say that.
I'm going to have to send that off to a Slack. And that's going to have to be the next beer name.
There you go.
We got a lot of feedback from what I heard from people. Some of my friends that had gone to the Rush Day over at Tioga was that the Lana stuff, the coffee wasn't strong enough. There was it wasn't. And I kind of like where this had come in to where, like, there's no mistaking. You smell it, it's coffee.
I agree.
You taste it, and there's plenty of coffee, but there's also plenty of beer there to where you're not just I'm not even really a coffee drinker, but I've been pouring some of this in the morning to get my day started.
Just, now you're a drinker.
Right. Yeah, now it's making me really like coffee.
I just drunk my day.
Yeah, I'm a morning drinker. I don't drink coffee.
Turns out I like coffee when it's in my beer.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I could see why.
Yeah.
I could definitely see why. So what other trends are you seeing there in Fresno, or what are you trying to bring out? You know, you got the cloudy IPA, you know, you're adding some fruit to your beers. Are you doing any sours or anything like that? Or are you letting other people deal with that shit?
I do want to try that. It's just I'm real kind of paranoid of putting out anything that's not kind of controlled in that way. Because, mm-hmm. again, that's what Full Circle was kind of known for before, was they put out a beer that was really sour and funky, and it wasn't supposed to be. And they would just be like, oh, what's a sour mash? And, yeah, no, you didn't sour the mash. You right. soured afterwards.
Yeah.
And so we do have to make sure that, you know, we're not putting out anything subpar in quality. And so I'm really nervous about doing anything full fermented sour.
Mm-hmm.
But Dionysus down in Bakersfield, they've come up in a Fresno. I met with one of the brewers at one point, and he's explaining how they do their sours right in the same equipment that all the rest of their stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're fine.
They're like, well, we've thrown out a couple of batches. I'm like, well, that's a couple of $1,000s.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
I'm still not able to just kind of brush that off.
Maybe the more you do it, the easier it gets.
The more you do, the better it is to swallow it, throwing down $1,000 with the
ingredients. Near $1,000 there. Pretty soon, hey, it's under $10,000.
Yeah, you're like, whatever. It's fine. Yeah.
But I do want to try doing a kettle sours.
Okay.
Because it's a little more controlled. I'm very much a control freak when it comes to the brewery. And
yeah.
And you can test the concept on your drinkers too and see what they think mm-hmm. about.
Yeah, but so. there are some, like, there's 411 Broadway Brewing that's going down again another quarter mile away from the brewery that they're going to focus on sours and distilling.
Oh wow! And okay.
So I can dig sours. To me, I'm much more of a hophead than sours. But I do like some of the tart ones, again, like some of the Ghosts and Berliners and.
Yeah.
Being able to do a Berliner and then have some different fruits to flavor them like they do, you know, over in Europe. And
yeah.
That's something that right now nobody in Fresno is doing. So there's.
That sounds like perfect for the summer, man.
Yeah.
So get on that.
Yeah.
There you go.
I just got to make sure my kettle can maintain the temperature because I've not had to deal with that up to the point. So it's another experiment to play around with.
In summer, that will be the temperature of the air.
Yeah.
You don't need to
cool
off.
It down overnight.
Right.
Yeah.
You just let it set at Fresno temperature.
It's over 110. It's midnight. I better cool this stuff down.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Well, I could see. Where people, sorry. Go ahead, too.
That's right. I was just wondering. I stand a lot of guys that put the liquid into back into the mash tun because it's not vented. Because the idea is to keep you don't want any oxygen getting in there overnight.
Yeah, I got to make sure I can seal my boil kettle up and also maintain the temperature, which luckily my whole cobbled together DIY system that I kind of inherited from these guys, it actually has a thermal well in the boil kettle. So I can just throw a thermometer or temperature probe in there and be able to read it. It's just I'm going to have to be there basically over the 24, 48 hours just to babysit that. And
you just strike up your direct fire or
steam, but it's not a jacket. It's like a little coil that runs through the center of the boil kettle.
Oh,
and so it's very much cobbled together. I don't even know what that kettle was used for before, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't beer because I have to mix it constantly to get a full rolling boil on it because the coil comes in somewhere in the middle and then coils down. Which means it's heating basically from the middle up. So the stuff at the bottom doesn't even get heated.
So it's not even a calandria. You don't actually have a shroud that actually creates convection?
Nothing like that, no.
Well, what about my idea of putting the whole thing back into and you know, clean out the mash tun, put it in there, and then just do a rims thing where you run it back through a coil you put into the kettle on a thermostat?
Yeah, it probably would work. I would just need that equipment. Yeah. And just right now we don't have that. But right
just
now,
buy a radiator at the junkyard from a car.
I'm sure it's fine. There's plenty of those right down Golden State. Like, yeah,
big, you know.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to try something like that. Or
you're in Fresno. I mean, come on, that shit's all.
There's radiators everywhere.
Yeah. It's not like Tasty has to drink the beer.
Fucking radiator.
Yeah, put in a radiator.
That'd be great.
It's just a little bit green. It's all right.
One in each vessel.
Yeah, I would have loved it if that was like the exit brewer's like you know notes. Like plans for a future. Radiator contraption. That'd be amazing.
DIY
take it back to next week. Like, yeah. On my money, man.
Single use.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to just basically sit there and babysit and see how, because the boil kettle is, does have some insulation on it, but the overnight, like I've heated up the, preheated the water up to just about boiling, so it goes 211, and then I come in the next morning, it's like 140.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, that was a lot of heat loss, so I'm going to have to sit there and tinker with the steam valves. And
when are you getting new equipment? That's, you got to talk question. To your bosses about that.
Yeah, we're trying to make what we've got there work for as long as we can, and basically just put in some fermenters and max out that seven barrel system as we, as much as we can before we're looking at either upgrading that spot there or just putting in a separate brew facility somewhere else where we've got a 15 or a 20 barrel, something that's double sized, you know, a little upgraded in size. You know, they've talked about, you know, that you can be the head brewer over there. Like, I don't want to go over there. I want to do the small stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I just want to keep playing around.
Be the design studio.
Yeah, you'd be the R&D. Here's how you get around the Berliner Weiss thing. Do a fucking collaboration with someone else. Make them use all their crap.
Or just...
That's how you do it.
Sour it in the fermenter.
Or you can sour it in the fermenter.
Or I can, do it and just piss everybody off and just dose acid straight into it when it's done.
You can do that.
Completely skip it all.
Yeah, I think it'd be great.
You're a seven barrel?
Seven barrel brew house.
Brew house, yeah. Just anecdotally.
Antidotally.
Antidotally. When I did a Berliner Weiss, I knocked out at about 104, 105 in a 10 barrel batch. It cooled about 8 degrees overnight just with ambient. So is it about 98 the next day? So that's all you lose.
Still pretty close to the range, right?
The lacto will still be happy at 98. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll have to test it out with some just straight water and just see what I get around. Off of it. And hopefully it's something that I can just set it and then come in the next day and deal with it rather than having to live there for 2 days.
Right.
I pretty much already live there anyways, but
the
fiance isn't happy with all of that.
So. I can imagine not, man.
Yeah, the first sour mash at Heretic took about almost three.
Oh, wow.
In order to get the pH down low enough.
3 days?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. It was a while.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. We got a Saturday brew out of it. That was fun.
Yeah. Sounds fun.
Totally intentional.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen some, like, I can't remember the brewery, but they make a Shade as one of their Gosa. Hmm. And they put out there, like, yeah, it's not kettle soured. Like, we just take a sample and we dose it with, you know, five or six different organic acids, and, you know, acetic and tartaric and malic and all these different little lactic. Yeah, all these different notes that you would otherwise get out of a natural sour fermentation in any way.
Well, they maybe just, not even then. It might just be pure lactic out of a... kettle sour or something.
But they kind of they want to avoid the one note, and so they do those other kind of acids and like that. That's, I did similar with Riley's, the pineapple mango Sancho, their blonde ale. When I first was doing some test batches with that, and I kept getting feedback that it needs more bitterness or it needs more tartness, it needs something to balance it out because it was just too sweet. And it kind of light bulb kind of clicked. I was like, well, yeah, you taste any fruit. Like, yeah, you got sweet, but you've always got tart.
Yeah.
You've got some kind of acidity to balance it out.
Yeah.
And on that one, I just added some citric acid to taste, basically on the big batch that kind of scaled it up from the small batch. And that little bit of acidity was just exactly what we needed for that, for people to really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they said a lot of it is kind of just screw you to all the fundamentalists. It's like, I'm going to do whatever I want to do to make a good product in the end. And if they don't like it, but everybody else does, well, then
that's fine.
Screw them. You can either like it or, you know, join the party or sit there and poo-poo it off of the side while the rest of us are enjoying it.
Yeah, have fun with your three-day brew day.
Yeah. Like, but I do want to try that just to do it the right way.
I think there's something to be said for tradition, and you try it because, you know, there is a different flavor. Maybe there isn't a different flavor. I don't. I've never had this other one. Is it good?
I'm sure the people that know it really well.
I had only read about it, so I haven't tried it.
No.
But like I said, if you're really not going for that super complex barrel aged sour taste, well, if you're able to dose that, get it close enough by your palate, and if people are liking it, then can you really complain about it that much?
I don't know. There's something to be said for being that transparent about how you're achieving that sourness too. I kind of like that. Love it or hate it. Traditionalist or not, it's you're being upfront and you're not trying to, you know, misle anybody. So
yeah, if I was, you know, bullshitting people and saying, oh yeah, this is a barrel aged sour and it really wasn't barrel aged, well yeah, there's something wrong with that. But if I'm straight up front and being like, like, yeah, it's not barrel aged. I just soured it myself. And
yeah, well, I mean, you can get liquid fucking oak tannin and powdered oak tannins and shit like that, and all sorts of winemaking. So you can pass off, maybe, I'm assuming, a barrel aged beer that was never even saw real oak.
Yeah, but to me, I wouldn't be right in calling that an actual barrel aged sour or anything.
Right.
Like, I'm very much about transparency and like this is my process. Like, I've got nothing to hide from anybody. My recipes aren't secret.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it's not the recipe that does it. It's everything else in between the recipe and actually the finished beer, mm-hmm. your process, your ingredients and everything else. Good. Yeah. So I'll give my recipe out to anybody, my techniques, because that doesn't mean you're going to make the same beer that I'm making.
Recipe's about 10%, I figure.
Yeah.
Unless it's a really bad recipe, then it's like 40%. No, yeah.
That 10% could ruin the whole beer.
Right.
But yeah.
That 10 can become 40, yeah.
But if it's reasonable, then yeah, the rest is how you
up. Yeah, it comes down to your process.
For
like,
sure.
Fresh ingredients.
The recipe for Pliny the Elder is out there for anybody who ever wants it. Sure. I dare you to try to make an exact copy of that beer.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the recipe. There's so much more to it.
Well, we used to sell it at More Beer, too. And back before the hop extracts were around. And so now you buy it from, I shouldn't say this, but the recipe has changed several times.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But there's that original recipe still out there. And I had someone email me like a year or two ago asking if that was really the recipe or we just made it up. And it's like, no,
that was it.
Just so you guys know that technology changes and beers change. And
ingredients
change. Ingredients change, for God's sakes. But,
I remember talking to Vinny one time. I go, why are you? Because I brew a beer there once a year. And he's always adding this extra base malt. Like,
yeah.
Like, why are you changing that every year? He goes, well, if I don't change, people are just going to be better than me. I got to keep up.
You got to stay relevant.
Okay, sure. He doesn't want to have the Pliny that he made back in 2003.
Right.
He needs to have a new Pliny every year.
Yeah, you got to stay with the times.
Exactly.
I like that approach. I think it's pretty cool. How are you handling working in the same town as all these other breweries? Are you guys doing any collaborations planned or kind of brewing together with some stuff?
We haven't done any collaborations. I'm actually kind of curious on how that would even happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really the new breweries, ours included, kind of need to set their standards of what it is that they're doing and kind of forge their own path and then kind of join up with the other breweries like Tioga that have their own path and, you know, the kind of stuff that they're known for, the stuff that they're really doing well. For us, I don't think we've really found that yet. So to collaborate with Tioga, it's like, I don't really see what I'm bringing to the table because to me, I'm still a complete freaking noob. And these guys have been doing it for way longer.
But to everybody else, you're the brewmaster, right? You're the guy making the beer, so you know more than you think you do.
Yeah, and then to me that...
And that knowledge is worth something.
My knowledge then is where... That's why I'm assistant vice president of the homebrew club.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much where I started was with the Warthogs Homebrew Club and learning from all these other guys that have been doing it for way longer than I had been doing it. And that's kind of how I see giving back as being an active part of the homebrew club and taking that same position as the guys that I looked up to, bringing that knowledge along to the guys that are just getting into it. And maybe they'll be pursuing being one of the brewers in the area, like a lot of my friends are, or maybe they're kind of the next generation that maybe a few years from now, they'll be ready to open a brewery. But there's still a lot of stuff that they need to just learn. It's kind of some of the basic stuff.
So you want these people just to figure out their mark, figure out, especially your target, what your sweet spot is for brewing, and then you can maybe branch out because for you, is it all about, or is it more about offering knowledge, really?
I don't really know what I would bring to the table with Tioga,
because
all of the guys that are involved there, they're at least on my level or way beyond.
Yeah.
And
Some 41 Brewing or whatever the 41, like that, right? Like them, they're, nobody knows, you know, so
typically
maybe you go with some of that.
Collaboration like that, what you bring is some like thing you do differently that they've never done before and vice versa.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you try to make a beer that's got some of that in involved. Like you both, have something unique that you do.
Yeah, or just your palette.
It might be
different.
Style.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, let's collaborate on, I don't know, a Vienna lager.
Something you both, neither one you make. You do lagers?
Yeah. We haven't done yet, but that is on my schedule for the next month. We're going to do a pre-prohibition lager.
Oh, yeah.
Since before it was Chinatown, it was actually Germantown in the area that we're at. And doing some research into the history, I'd seen that there was some like pamphlets that were being passed out back in the late 1800s, before the turn of the century, to get German settlers to come to Fresno in the San Joaquin Valley, and they called it Sommerland, which is the land of eternal summer, which if you've ever been to Fresno, it's summer all fucking year.
Okay.
And so it makes sense. And surprisingly, that name hasn't been taken by anybody. And nobody does a pre-prohibition lager.
Yeah, it's hard to find them, man, for sure.
Because it's after prohibition.
That's post-prohibition right lager. Yeah. Warren, I don't think you could ever go to Fresno because I think you would ignite.
Yep. I would just sweat into a puddle.
Yeah. I think you would just spark.
Yeah. It would be awful. That might be why I don't frequent Fresno.
That's the only reason.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I think in the next year, there's going to be half a dozen reasons to stop in Fresno.
Yeah, it sounds like there is already.
It's about to blow up.
Yeah.
It's really getting there.
From the sun. We're
all about to ignite.
The scene's about to get real hot.
Yeah.
I was going to go there. There was a homebrew club I was supposed to go talk at, and I couldn't make it so many times he stopped asking, I think. But you guys can go ahead and ask again. I'll come down.
You kept looking at the weather?
We keep looking at our watches like, he's supposed to be here.
Spring or fall.
He said he was going to be here. Where's Toasty?
Well, Mike, I'm glad that you made the trip, man.
Yeah,
I'm glad
you
brought the beers.
Fun.
They were delicious, and I think we had a good time hanging out, man, and talking beer and Fresno.
First one,
Yeah, you know, look, man, it's just about the appearance, but God, it smells great.
Well, do you never drink orange juice?
I do.
Just pretend it's that, and it's 6% alcohol.
I can't drive. I've had a lot of orange juice.
Yeah. No pulp variety.
Pretend it's a mimosa.
Yeah. There you go.
See, I can drink mimosas.
Yeah.
But no, does it just need like some extra carbonation?
Or? Maybe if you carbonate it a little bit more.
And I don't know what it is, right? Like I want to be accepted, and I want to know what everybody's like excited about. But it's like when I see them on Instagram or whatever, people like to post these fucking beers, and it's like dishwater.
Oh,
and
some of them photograph terribly.
They do, and I look at them, and literally my stomach goes. Yeah. I can't get behind it.
Yeah. You look at it in person, and it doesn't look so bad. But then you put a flash on it, and like it looks like. Dirty
all
dishwasher.
Those
like, stop taking pictures. Turn your flash off.
Yeah, when you put light on it, all those little particles like explode with light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason they put that stuff in cans and not bottles.
Yeah, that's true. Mike, Full Circle Brewing, you can go to, I believe it's fullcirclebrewing.com.
Yeah, or the Facebook. The Facebook's a little more active. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're constantly having events. That's one of the things that's kind of setting us apart is that we've got this huge space to be able to do events, different music. And
a lot of music I saw on your website.
Yeah, definitely.
Like lots of nights a week kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
there's like video clips on there, which is kind of cool. You can see what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're real active on that and just really making it into an event place. And that's what the owners are looking to do is make it pretty much an event place to do concerts and shows like that.
Nice.
And then also have the brewery attached.
Sure.
So something very unique.
That is very cool. What else is very cool is craftbeer.com. It was built
to
communicate the passion, authenticity, excitement, creativity, camaraderie, and the joy of the craft beer community. Plain and simple, craftbeer.com was created on behalf of U.S. craft brewers to celebrate the best of American beer. When visiting craftbeer.com, you can expect to learn about all aspects of the amazing craft brewed beer from America's small and independent producers, not just how to better enjoy the beverage in your glass, but about the individuals and processes behind your beer. Their goal is to energize and engage craft beer enthusiasts and arm them with the resources to be active and educate appreciators of the ever-expanding craft beer movement. Check it out, craftbeer.com. Mike, I appreciate it, dude.
Well, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, for sure, man. Come back anytime. We're going to do some beer news after this. We're going to taste my homebrew, so you're more than welcome to hang out if you want an excuse to throw up.
It's best if you go.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said it's best if you go.
you might...
If you still have some angst about him, Don shitting on your beer, you got a chance to get even.
Oh, there we go.
Oh.
Hang on. It's the session. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters, Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Check out their brand new patent-pending mash and boil 110-volt electric mashing and boiling unit. This compact all-stainless unit lets you mash, sparge, and boil just about anywhere that has a 110-volt plug. Double wall construction adds to efficiency and safety, and a precise thermostat keeps temperatures where you want them. Unlike insulated buckets and converted coolers, multiple temperature rest mashing is easy to do, all for under $300. They also feature the Mark II work pump, a magnetic drive high temperature pump that does the work of pumps that cost twice as much, as well as exclusive Brewer's Edge regulators and quality Keg King kegs and disconnects. Check them out today at williamsbrewing.com to bruise their vast selection.
With over 20 years of experience making world-class craft beer and more than 100 gold medals in international competitions, Moylan's Brewing Company is not just a pretty face in craft beer. Just ask Brendan Moylan.
What do we got here? The beer of the hour. Moylan's, gotta love that big M. It's like a sign of awesomeness. Woo-hoo! It's got an extra kick to it. Let's pour this bad boy. Oh, Moylan's. The end of the night when the kids are finally in bed, the wife's in bed, nobody's bothering your ass anymore. That's Moylan's time. Moylan's is for you.
Yeah!
It's to help you out.
Yeah.
It helps me out.
What?
Well, because it's freaking awesome. Northern California brewed. It's brewed with love.
With love?
Oh, yeah. Tremendous. And it's always best where?
Moylan's.
You gotta try it on tap at Moylan's in Novato. They're freaking awesome. Not only because I own the brewery, because I love the beer.
Cheers.
Boom.
Kilt Lifter Scotch Ale takes big beers to a whole new level with rich malt balanced perfectly with delicate hops, and now comes in four pack tall boy cans so you can take the party on the go. Or come to the brewery, take a tour, and try any of Moylan's fresh creations right from the source. Check them out at Moylan's.com.
Hey there, BN Army. Have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
Great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft lines.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone certification program offers four levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe and until we're able to make a great commercial version, too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
Hey, this is Julian Trego from Beachwood Brewing, and you are listening to Necession on the Brewing Network.
Hey, thanks for hanging out, everybody. Bev, you are so amazing. Thank you very much.
She knew exactly how long it would take.
She did. She did. I still don't have a glass of water, but that's okay.
Well, you have a giant glass.
Yeah, but I got these little shooters.
Growler of water.
Whatever. What are you going to do, right?
Right.
We're going to taste some of Warren's beer, too, on the show.
Oh, no.
Are you excited, Another Tasty? One.
I'm very excited.
He sounds like it.
Well, they've all been good. So I mean,
yeah,
they've been okay.
This one's drinkable.
Yeah,
you won't spit this one out either.
They've been left of good, but that's okay.
No, they've been good.
Yeah. This is the new Vienna Lager just on tap today.
I can do that. You don't have to do that, but
fresh out of the tank.
Okay, then go ahead.
It's no slow clap, but it's a different one.
These are oatmeal stouts.
Right.
These are my beers, and then these are the Grotchitskis. Do you hear that hiss? Anyway, Neshaminy Creek. Actually, these guys are going to be on the 417 show. They're pretty awesome. They've been on the Philly beer map scene since 2012. Sorry, I've had some beers. They are 3-time Philly Beer Scene Magazine Brewery of the Year, 2014, 15, and 16. 2-time GABF Vienna Style Lager Medal winner, 2013 gold, and 2016 they won the bronze for that. Also a bronze for their smoked lager in 2016. So they're winning some awards out there in Philly. They've expanded and recently renovated their tap room with 24 beers on tap, 18 of which are rotating and seasonal or limited beers. They have a variety of styles, from hoppy double IPAs to sessionable and poundable lagers to oak fermented saisons and sour beers, plus brew tours on Saturday. They have a new second location opening this spring. Check them out, NeshiminiCreekBrewing.com. If you're out that way, check them out. They're good dudes. I can't wait to try their beer. I hope to God they have a Vienna lager and they ship it out to us. That's going to be amazing, Warren.
Yeah, if not, we should cancel them.
We should cancel. Hey, Jeremy. Go jump off a cliff with your no Vienna lager having ass.
Oh, and on the Jamil show, I said, email me a picture of you there, and I'll send you a sticker. Tasty sticker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Give me this.
Through April. Through April.
Bev, you best pour me. So this is my oatmeal stout.
Oh. Is it the more beer recipe?
No. It's totally different. But this was bottled in my fucking janky ass bottling wand method.
Supported that reasonably.
Your Teflon wand.
It has some decent carbonation to it. Left. Sort of.
It has no problem with carbonation.
And she didn't pour my fucking water, babe!
They would not say this beer is under carbonation.
Yeah.
They would not, right?
No.
How is it? Is it alright? Be honest. But not too honest.
Yeah. Good luck.
Be 75% honest. Good luck with you.
Hope you're dressed early in the flight.
Right.
No, it's actually very clean, which is, of course, when you
actually
send a beer to competition, clean's good, right?
Yeah.
So
that's what they're looking for, is flaws.
It's in the normal oatmeal stout category? That's
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I bumped it up. You know, it's not my, the recipe I worked on forever and ever.
Why would you change it now?
Because I was talking about it on Dr. Homebrew, actually. I brought the original in.
Overanalyzed.
Yeah, those assholes. Ooh. And,
Oh, you got some advice.
And I kind of realized that I'm brewing it for me, but trying to enter it into this category that it doesn't fit in, because it's not roasty enough. I don't like a lot of roast in my oatmeal stouts. I don't like them at all. And so I kind of knocked all the roast out of my stout and went pale chocolate. Mm-hmm. And Brian, I think, was the one. He goes, ditch the pale chocolate and just go chocolate, because it has some roast to it. But it's, yeah. Because I want that. I want it to be evident that it's a stout, and a lot of the comments I was getting at NHC was it kind of tastes more like a porter.
And so for competition to go into the oatmeal stout category,
yes.
Swap it out to a little
I swapped it out. Yeah, I actually also swapped out the crystal malt for British crystal to kind of get a little more of that mid-palate mouthfeel because I felt mine was a little watery. Because in the past, that recipe would only get 35. Maybe I think I topped out once at a 40.
We're using Brees crystal malt? Or what
yeah.
Before?
Yeah, American crystal, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the crystal malt definitely has a big part.
Yeah, so I'm specifically brewed this for competition. It's maybe a little too rich for me normally, but...
Bevo brought me water.
Wow, she didn't bring me water.
No. Oh, is this your glass?
She's glaring
at me for?
Like she's shoving it right in
the face. That was a death stare.
Well, that's a good strategy where you you know, you change the recipe up a little bit to make sure that it
right.
is more in style.
Yeah.
And once a beer is like, you know, if it tastes good, the judges will like, you know, and it's close to style. They won't even mention style. They're more about how good the beer tastes.
Is it close to style?
Yeah, it's close enough for me. Yeah.
All right.
It's definitely a stout.
Mike, what do you think?
I really dig the aroma on it. Just like really creamy, I guess, aroma.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say quite banana, but it reminds me of when my mom would make the vanilla wafer banana pudding. Hmm. Just that real sweet. It's probably more vanilla than anything. I don't have the best palate in the world to pick out things, but...
I did really.
Okay.
I'm joking.
Asshole.
Yeah.
I did the aroma.
Vanilla wafer,
really,
I think.
Like rich vanilla.
I could see that. It, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, it's very pleasant to drink.
Oh, and I used English ale yeast on this.
So chocolate malt was the darkest malt that you used in this beer?
No, I also used... German Prinz.
The Black Prinz,
yeah.
Black Prinz? Okay, so it's essentially a dehusked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I use that, too.
Yeah.
I got Black Prinz and the German Prinz mixed up, and that's something that should never happen.
No, yeah, that doesn't happen.
No.
I think you might still have a lack of roast issue.
God damn it, Warren!
From a competition perspective.
Yeah, okay. Really? On an oatmeal stout?
Saying I don't like...
The oatmeal stout is the one that's...
I don't
is
like
nice.
This beer and,
no,
don't, and
no,
wouldn't
no, I know.
Drink it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's a very tasty beer, but if I'm judging in a competition...
Mm-hmm, which you are.
Right now, yeah. I would be looking for a little bit more of a dark malt character.
Okay.
So say you had, for instance, in judging, you might have had... Two beers that were actually a little bit over roast.
Exactly. By the time
you get to this beer, you go like,
right?
What is this?
Exactly.
Yeah, someone put a fucking porter.
It's a Schwartz beer.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm thinking if it comes late in the flight,
okay,
and it come to this,
yeah,
it might run into issues with the roast character.
If I make it into the second round, do you think I should bump the roast up?
Or you're going to rebrew it if you?
Yeah. I mean, this beer is only 2.5 weeks old.
Yeah. I would bump it up a little bit.
Do you think I should rebrew it? I don't know. I mean, I just made that up.
Well,
see what the comments are.
I might not actually do it. Yeah. Mm. Right, exactly.
Okay.
See what the comments are. And then decide.
And you could, you know, do some tincturing kind of thing at the end, too, if you want. Just make a nice little batch of roasty stuff.
Yeah.
You can add it, you know, at bottling time if you want.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You want to try my... Krodzitski, or do you want to try your fucking shit piece of shit beer?
Well, mine's not smoked, so depending how smoky yours is, maybe
it's not very. It's a 3.2% beer. It's not very smoky.
Okay, yeah, then we can do yours first.
You want to do mine? Okay. Sure. Oh, Bev will get. Oh, God.
Don't worry.
Yeah, I'm not going to put you.
We don't want to inconvenience you.
Really? Don't worry.
Yeah.
See your jump up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took like 5 minutes, but it was a jump.
Right. We're still waiting, but
it's a slow jump.
You jumped.
Yeah. I did make an oatmeal stout.
You can
recently.
Pour mine in that one because I blew in it.
Yeah, I made an oatmeal stout with a Ceylon cinnamon in there and toasted 50 pounds of flaked oats at home, which took 2 goddamn days. It was the worst idea ever.
50 pounds? Yeah, dude. I did 14.4 ounces of this and toasted it, and it took about 15 minutes. So, yeah, I could see that sucking a lot.
Yeah, it was a terrible idea. The beer came out pretty good, but
it was
terrible. I was going for an oatmeal raisin cookie, and so I added a little bit of special B. It wasn't nearly enough special B for it to come out.
Yeah,
but the rest of the beer came out pretty good. It wasn't quite as rich as that. I think the kind of spice kind of cut through it a little bit.
Okay,
It was definitely just a shot in the dark experiment. I actually had never made an oatmeal stout before that, so it was.
Would you do it again?
I would change it up. I think I used too much oats because there's zero head retention whatsoever.
Mm.
It's like 30%+ oats.
Oh, wow. And, yeah.
Yeah. No, way too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I would definitely cut that back some more and maybe put some flaked barley to get that signature head retention on it.
Okay.
But yeah, that was one of those that was just a shot in the dark experiment. Let's make something that maybe is like an oatmeal raisin cookie. And the raisin didn't come out. So like, okay, well, that's an oatmeal cookie stout. And,
yeah,
kind of went off of that.
And why not?
Yeah, why not? Use that cinnamon from Sri Lanka. That's a little different from what you're used to, in like a big red stick of gum or something.
Yeah,
it's not nearly as pungent, but it definitely has enough cinnamon to it. I just threw a half pound in at the end of the boil into some bags, and
sounds good.
It was interesting.
Yeah,
definitely try it out and refine it next time.
Awesome. Yeah,
Matt Sanger, the brewer down at Danville Brewing Company, does an oatmeal raisin stout. That's
yeah, he's
tasty.
Been doing it like as a home brewer too.
Right? Yeah,
he just kind of grew it up.
Yeah,
yeah.
He did a commercial batch this fall.
Yeah,
one of their first batches. And
I haven't
it was pretty
had
tasty.
It. I mean, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Speaking of pretty good, what do you think of my Pivo Gorzycki?
Yeah, when's the Vienna coming?
I don't know, Mike. You brew a Vienna because Warren wants a good one.
Right? Yeah. Whenever there's a good one, let me know.
Not yet, but apparently I have to.
I mean, so this is a 3. So the top of the style for this is 3-2, and I made this 3-3.
So it's got a defined style in the BJCP.
Yeah, on the historical, it's like 27E or some bullshit like that.
For what style?
Grodzicki, the smoke beer right here.
Oh, Grotzer.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
That's the new style in this.
Yeah,
The new guidelines have
the
it.
The new
in
guidelines
there.
Have it. Yeah. So I intentionally pushed it a little bit.
It seems bigger than 3-3. Or
well, that's good. Yeah, it's 100% oak smoked wheat malt. I bumped the IBUs up by like 5, you know, over the thing, just because I feel like this beer, it, normally if you have it, I made it at like 2.8, and it tasted really thin. This tastes very thin, but it's not like, I don't know, I feel like to stand out in a with a beer like this in the historical category, which covers like London Porter or whatever the fuck, I think you need to be a little bit beefier than the style. I don't know if that is going to serve me well or not.
I think it will.
Yeah.
Especially on a smaller beer like this, being at the higher end of the style is definitely
almost
a smart
on
idea.
Every style, you want to be at the higher end of it, or it's not exceeded a little.
Yeah, you want to make sure that those flavors hammer home for the judges.
Right, right, right.
If you're just making it higher in alcohol for just, you know, the hell of it, there's no purpose there. But for flavor, malt flavor, hop flavor, yeah, make a bigger beer.
But outside of competition, this is pretty damn good.
No, thank you. Thanks. I'm pretty pleased with it. What do you think about it?
I'm not familiar with the style. It's a good beer. It's clean.
I've had two examples. One from someone on Dr. Homebrew, and then one that I made. So I don't know either. Actually, that's a lie. But you can find one at the store.
You can.
They're hard to find. Yeah. It's like I forget the brewery name, but I think it's called like 1806 or something. I don't know. It's in a taller bottle. You can find that Monument actually.
Oh really?
Yeah. Okay. Every once in a while.
And it. This clarity is normal for, I mean, is that within the
style?
Well,
no, it's supposed to be brilliantly clear.
Brilliant.
But I added a bunch of Biofine, and this is as clear as I could get it, which I posted a photo on my Instagram or whatever of like a side-by-side. The thing was fucking murky as fuck, like super, super murky, and this is as clear as I could get it. So I think I'm going to lose a point, maybe, but I think you'd have to be an asshole to ding me a point on that. It's a little...
There's
a
slight haze,
you're a
but you can clearly see to the other side of the glass.
Yes, you can read through it.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's
it,
a
but
haze.
It is not brilliant.
It's not brilliant.
It's not brilliant.
It's not brilliant, no. So, I don't know. I mean...
Oh.
I hope your kid fails.
How do you do your
first grade?
How do you do your Biofine dosing? You just...
I just put...
From the hip? And...
Yeah. I just read the thing where it was like a quarter tablespoon... per 5 gallons, and I'm doing 3 gallon batches. So I just started with that and left it for a day, and I didn't really see anything. It's like, well, fuck it. I jumped up to 1 tablespoon and shook it up, and then the next day I got this. So I'm like, okay, I need to keg this thing, I need to keg it now. So
yeah, I've been using a Nalco, which is basically just the no name version of Biofine. It's colloidal silica, same idea, but I'll take a sample of the base beer after I've cold crashed it to where it's as clear as it's going to get on its own,
yeah,
and then dose it with different rates, you know, per barrel to get an idea of.
Yeah, you do like a bench trial or whatever.
How clear it's going to be, but also then how solid does it settle out? Because if you use way too much, you'll get super duper clear beer, but you'll throw away half of your batch because it's so fluffy at the bottom.
Right.
So that's where I've kind of had to dial it in with something like a Clusterfuggle, the cream ale. And that's where it takes a little bit longer, and that's part of why I like those hazy IPAs, that I'm able to turn them around super quick and not have to wait for them to crash out.
Right.
Whereas the cluster, now that I've got an idea that I can throw in however much of Nalco it seems to take per batch and get it pretty clear, but the first initial trials, I'd pull a sample and dose it with different rates to see not only how clear it got, but how solid it settled out.
Yeah.
And I've had to do that for different beers, and it's been pretty different in dosage on that stuff.
Well, you're better at math than I am. Remember that.
Possibly, yeah.
I just wing it. I mean, dude, I bottled with a fucking bottle filler wedged up a picnic tap. Oh, that's right. That's how I bottled with this. And I used Teflon tape to seal it. I'm not very good. What do you think of the carbonation level on this? It's supposed to be, like, very effervescent.
Oh, yeah, I think that could be increased.
Oh, yeah. It is a little creamy, but
yeah,
it's a little,
not
yeah,
in a bad way. I mean,
it's, especially if the style guide says effervescent.
Yeah.
This is not that.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
Well, maybe if someone didn't lose his fucking beer gun. Yeah, I already shipped it.
Hey, more beer is how far from your house?
And bless you. Too far.
Too far?
Too far.
Oh, sorry. That's on me then.
Yeah. Well, anyway, those are my NHC entries.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I have a good shot. I don't know.
You got a chance.
Yeah. I mean, how many other Grzinskis are there?
By definition, I have a chance.
Like Dumb and Dumber. Yeah. Yeah, I got a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance. Yeah.
Well, see, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, do they lump all of the historical beers on one flight?
Right,
well, what's the major category?
It's a subcategory,
right?
Yeah.
Category of what? Hybrid or something?
Historical beer.
Historical beer.
It's like 27.
Then, yeah, based on like the size
C
of the competition.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like I assume the first round of the national competition.
Here,
I would expect to be like 8 to 10 beers of this, in this category.
That's what I would expect also. So
you're going to be a better historical beer than this other historical beer in a completely different style.
But he's only competing against the other people that send this style to his judging center.
I don't know.
Which could be...
Well,
No.
I don't think so, because...
You're not going to get first, second, and third in this historical style. It's going to be first, second, and third for historical style, right?
I think so. So here are the historical beers. You have the Gozas, which I think going up against that is going to be tough.
Oh, yeah.
Kentucky Common, which we talked about earlier.
That's another new one.
Lichtenhainer.
No idea.
Lichtenhainer.
A London Brown Ale. The Pivo Grodzicki. Pre-Prohibition Lager, which I think this will be really tough to go up against.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-Prohibition Porter, which I've never fucking heard of. Roggenbier and Sati, whatever. Sati.
Sati.
Yeah, there's some pretty popular historic styles in there that you'd be up against.
Yeah, so I don't know if they break it out, because it does have a sub. I think it's like E or whatever with the sheet prints out. So,
but it's one of the, what, there's a major number for this, 20 or...
27.
Okay, so they only give a first, second, or third in the 27. They don't
Right, that's true, yeah. Not 27E.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's fucked up of them, not me.
Right. Well, maybe you should petition to have that changed.
Maybe I should.
Yeah.
Maybe
I
will.
Well, the IPA thing is going to be like 110 entries. And
right.
They still only get first, second,
5 years. Yeah. 5 years.
Don't complain
after
too much. You're one of 20, not one of 90. Or
maybe if you get 150 people to enter this category, they might spin it off.
Yes.
Let's do it, everybody. Right. I need the BN Army to rally against the Pivo Grodzicki.
help JP get a medal.
Basically, tank your recipes, you fucks.
Well, redraw the lines until he gets one.
Thank you. That'd be nice.
Yeah, well, then we'll throw all the injuries other guys out.
Right.
Then we'd like, register ahead of time.
Then we'd be like the GABF. That was a joke, by the way. What is this beer that you brought us, Warren? Before we get to beer news real quick.
Oh, right.
We can leave.
It's quite multiple. So it's a Vienna lager. Not like the one that we did last year at Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
Kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. A lot lighter in color.
Yeah.
And pretty malty. Just hoppy enough to kind of crisp it out at the end so it's not super cloying and makes you want to drink it more. I think, anyway. We'll see what you guys think.
Tastes good. I like it. Yeah, it definitely isn't as malty as the one we made at Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
And I would compare it to the one I made at Eagle Rock, but I never got any of that.
I never got any of that either.
Yeah, fucking Kevin.
Well, the
yeah.
one you made at Zero had some adjuncts, right? Some other usual malts or something?
Justin wanted it to be pretty dark.
Yeah.
And so it had quite a bit of roasted grains in it just to give it the color.
Mm-hmm. Rather than just a Vienna.
Yeah, this is mainly Vienna base and then has a little bit of Pilsner in Munich. And then,
but that's lighter in Lullaby than the Vienna,
right, exactly. And so there's three, I think, just under 4 pounds of Carafa 2 Special, just to give it just a little orangey color.
Are you happy with it?
Rather than dark yellow, it's more orange.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so it just barely gets in there under the SRM limits for the style.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm pretty pleased with it. My goal was kind of just to make a lower ABV, slightly hoppier Oktoberfest, because that was really popular this past fall.
Okay.
So we'll see what people think of it.
Well, I think you did.
If they don't
that.
Like it, just rename it Oktoberfest.
Exactly. Well, that was literally my test. It's like, well, we'll see if people like the beer or if they just like the name.
There you go.
And so, because I think this is a little bit tighter and better than the Oktoberfest was, because that was only the second lager that I had done at the time.
Yeah.
And so, done quite a few since, and so this is quite a bit better, I think. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Now, off the faucet, does it have more carbonation than this beer?
Yeah. This was not a great growler, Phil.
Motherfucker.
I'm still letting the bar staff do it.
Well, what you got to do is you got to get a bottling wand and wrap Teflon tape around it and just jam it up
try
into
that
the faucet.
Method. Yeah, I should try that method.
And that's what you should try.
Yeah.
I mean, it clearly works.
Yeah. So it is more carbonated right out of the tap. But
thank God, right? Tasty.
Right.
I mean, fuck.
Saves this beer.
Well, no, it changes the beer. It'll it's like any especially in a beer that's got low IBUs like this, it like adds another 30% bitterness to the beer, the carbonation.
And this is also fairly warm too, because it took a while to get here as usual.
It's like one of the worst drives in the world.
Yeah, so it only spent since I got here right before the show in the cold room. So this is probably about 15 degrees warmer than when it comes out of the tap too, which would also accentuate the bitterness.
Okay,
but yeah. I think it tastes pretty good.
Sounds great, man.
Get your cooler.
Yeah.
Right, for
you
my car?
Get your cooler. Yeah, man.
Yeah, to drive the beer up here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of tasting good, if you guys are in town, if you're in the Bay Area, hit up Drake's. Go to Drake's Brewing. And they're in San Leandro. They have the Drake's dealership.
Yep.
Right? Which I think is in Oakland, right?
Oakland.
I have yet to be there, but I hear
great stop. It's
all the rage.
It is.
It's a very nice spot. They're opening a spot in Sacramento.
Drake's?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right? In some weird, friggin'
community area. They're going to be, being the beer purveyor of this in this one little community thing that they built.
Yeah, well, have you seen the building that they're in?
Yeah, it's really
unusual. Mike Condi posted a picture. It looks like this.
I don't know how it stands. It stays up.
It looks like a friggin' modern art sculpture. It's
it's like a gourd or something.
Yeah, it's like two ends, right? And it's like this swoop.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's all wood. It's fucking amazing looking
Drake's
building.
Drake's Commune?
I don't know.
Is that what's happening?
Maybe. That sounds like it. But anyway, it's going to be great. So they're expanding, definitely. But if you see Drake's on the shelves, man, pick it up. You won't be disappointed. And if you're around, definitely hit them up. You can go to their tasting room. You go to the barrel room there at the brewery. Good stuff. Good people. Good
I voted
stuff.
For them today on the...
For what? What
the
are they
AHA has their annual Best Beers in America thing.
Uh-huh.
And get to vote for two different breweries or beers.
Yeah.
And you select the brewery, then you select the beer. And I want to vote for 1500. So I did.
There you go.
Did our pale ale. It's really good. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Speaking of good, let's do some beer news real fast.
Yes, please.
Just because there's a lot of good stuff. Zima is coming back.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been missing it.
I know, right? Nearly 25 years after it was first introduced, MillerCoors may be preparing to bring Zima back to the U.S. market. The company filed for a trademark on the term in April of last year, and the mark was recently published for opposition, asking if the filing was an indication the company would be bringing back the clear, lightly carbonated alcoholic beverage. MillerCoors only indicated there will be more news to come in the future. This is a quote from MillerCoors. They said, if you're one of the zillion fans... okay.
An imaginary number.
Zillion
right.
fans.
Who have missed Zima, the answer should be clear. That was their statement.
It.
Yeah. And I remember,
I totally got that.
When did it leave?
I don't know.
There is in no color.
95. I remember being at my friend's house, and we would open a Zima.
Yeah.
And drink like half of it, and then fill it with water, and put the because there's a twist off, and put the cap back on. And we never got like really in trouble for it, but I think it's one of those things that parents are like, really, you fucking idiots. I didn't know.
You were responsible for Zima going out of business.
Probably.
Like, why is this water down your shit here?
Yeah. Their trademarks on Zima and other related products were canceled in 2012. It was the first, quote, alternative beverage introduced to three test markets in 92, expanded in 93, then taken national in early 94. They blah, 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 blah.
I don't think I've ever had one. What is it? Anybody had it?
Mike's Hard Lemonade with less lemonade.
It's just clear.
Oh, it has a lemony kind of character?
I don't really remember.
I was nine.
Pretty much all the alternatives.
When it went off the market, so
I think
no
they
idea.
Do. Well, they had a Zima Citrix in 98, which I think was like a citrusy thing. I don't remember it, to be honest with you. I can't tell you. But it's out. They should be clear, tasty. That we're
really?
Be
how about a New
taste
England Zima?
New England
Zima.
I know what I'm working on when I get back.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
New England style Zima.
Discontinued in 2008. Following the formation of MillerCoors joint venture, but it continues.
So basically, it's Obama's fault,
right? Thanks, Obama. but it continues to sell in Japan and other international markets. Oh, okay. So
interesting,
you know.
So Coors has to refile.
They have to refile for the trademark because they abandoned it, I guess. And if I'd known that, I would have filed for a trademark.
Right,
trademark.
Might as well lock that thing down,
dude. Jesus.
Then you could make so much money selling it back,
right?
To Coors.
Oh
right
my
now?
God, forget about it.
All the zillions of fans?
Fucking zillions, dude.
Zillions.
That was almost a zillion.
That was almost like my bad Fresno. What was the fucking name? The beer name I just gave you? Fresno. It was like
Fresence?
Yeah, Fresence, I think it's probably what it was.
The essence of Fresno?
Yeah. Fresence.
It's probably still going to get used.
I think it should. I think it should. This is an article entitled Heineken Launches Craft Beer for Non-Craft Beer Drinkers.
Thank God.
Which I thought...
They should do that well, if anybody...
Yeah.
About damn time.
I thought was Heineken.
I thought it was Lagunitas.
I thought it was Lagunitas.
Yeah.
The new beers are a Bavarian-style Pilsner and an American-style IPA.
Oh, craft beer.
Craft beer.
Because there's not enough American-style IPAs out there in the world.
Never heard of it.
Or Pilsner.
They're being rolled out this month under the Maltsmiths Brewery label. Apparently that's owned by Heineken. Sam Fielding, who heads up the new beer team at Heineken, said the company could have a positive impact on the sector. Although people were talking about and experimenting with new beers, around 75% of beer drinkers had not yet tried, quote, and this is literally in quotes, craft beer.
75%.
75% of people who drink beer have not tried, quote, craft beer.
Wow.
Were they in Fresno when they asked that question?
It might be.
Okay, let's assume that they did it like a completely random,
Who knows where this was done, right?
Yeah.
Sam Fielding, this is a quote from Sam Fielding. He says, this is about getting curious beer drinkers into the category and expanding their repertoire with more flavorsome beers. Huh? Flavorsome beers.
Oh.
Which will be a springboard for them to discover beers from the 1,500 breweries in the UK, he says. I wonder if this is only in the UK then.
No, I'm thinking it might be.
They spelled flavor with a U, so. Yeah.
So that's 25% thing, 75, that's UK.
That's UK, yeah, which makes sense over there. Mm-hmm.
If a 25-year-old goes in a bar with other 25-year-olds around here, you're going to be drinking craft.
You're going to be drinking craft beer, yeah. Well, that's why the Americans are better than the English.
Well, better.
This is about supporting.
Further along the timeline.
No, better. Right. God better? Damn it.
Yeah, we won. They lost.
We won.
This is about supporting our customers and growing the category for the entire industry. The Maltsmiths Pilsner contains Centennial, Chinook, and Columbus hops.
Leading the way.
Right.
Yeah.
Brand new Chinook, fresh on the market.
In a Pilsner. That's the Pilsner?
Huh.
The Maltsmiths Pilsner contains Centennial, Chinook, and Columbus hops to give it earthy, pine, and citrus flavors with a U, with depth, while the Maltsmiths IPA, IPA has noble hops, I'm going to throw up.
With Hallertau Middle Food.
Yeah. Has a more caramel base, so there you go, English IPA.
Of course.
With hops giving notes of citrus, grapefruit, and tropical fruits, and a little pine for freshness. Both beers are 4.6%.
Wait.
Yes!
It definitely is the UK, then.
Oh,
if an IPA is 4.6%.
Developed at the Caledonian Brewery in Edinburgh.
I mean, yeah. I'm not. Both I'm all beers for are four, a 4.6% IPA.
Me too.
Let's do it.
Maybe dollar tub.
One of the people who developed the recipes, Alex Brandon Davies, explained that they had wanted to brew beers that would, quote, appeal to the beer curious, who, for whatever reason, have, quote, yet to experiment.
Is that one of the new genders on Facebook?
It might be.
I'm beer
curious.
It's
50 Shades of fucking beer.
Door, yeah. You're seeing that now.
Wow.
I didn't know I was, but I was born this way, I'm pretty sure.
God.
It's a choice.
We're hoping that beer drinkers will love the fuller flavors with a U, and it will be their first step into experimenting with beers from the hundreds of other breweries in the UK. Bold statement. Bold wow. And brass and big and ballsy and brass.
Well, I'm glad that they're finally brewing for the everyday man.
Me too. Well, thank God.
Yeah. I assume they've got, you know, they have like Tidehouse laws are like legal. In fact, that's what they prefer.
Yeah.
So I assume they'll be able to put these beers into their... boring beer establishments, and people will actually be, you know,
yeah, probably
get to try these beers.
Yeah.
Speaking of gateway.
Speaking of bold and brassy, there's an airline that launched a bottled beer specifically brewed to taste better at 35,000 feet.
Huh.
And I got this. I wanted to bring it up and see what you guys thought.
Interesting.
It's a carbonation thing.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hong Kong carrier Cathay Pacific has launched Betsy Beer, which they claim is the world's first handcrafted bottled beer uniquely designed to be consumed mid-flight. The new beer will initially be served to first and business class passengers on board flights between Hong Kong and Heathrow, Gatwick, and Manchester from 1 March until 30 April.
Duh.
Dicks. The beer is named Betsy after Cathay Pacific's first aircraft, taking into account that flyers' taste buds are dulled by cabin pressure. Betsy Beer has been produced in collaboration with brewery Hong Kong Beer Company by combining science and traditional brewing methods.
Huh.
It comprises both Hong Kong and UK source ingredients and creates an aroma and necessary carbonation to be consumed both in the air and on the ground.
Oh, wait a second.
You right. can do it both ways.
You can, apparently. You don't have the science and the traditional brewing knowledge.
How often does science
that's
get combined?
Hong Kong
at 30,000 feet.
Yeah. The beer is flavored with a U with longanberries and honey. And is added in the brewing process. Are you fucking serious?
Are you
serious?
Just getting your added news from the BBC? The what is with all the U's?
This is Maybe from the Daily Mail. Loganberries and honey and is added in the brewing process. Huh. Really fascinating.
Yeah.
Fuggle, a hop and a mainstay of traditional British craft ales, gross, also features. Cathay's Pacific General Manager of Marketing, Julian Lydon, says, "We know that when you fly, your sense of taste changes. Airlines address this for food in certain ways, but nobody has ever tried to improve the taste of beer at altitude. That seemed like a great opportunity for us to help our beer-loving passengers travel well."
I don't think Fuggle tastes great at any altitude.
They haven't fixed the carbonation problem.
Probably, yeah. They don't say specifically what's going on, but there you have it.
Did you really expect them to specify what was going on?
Kind of, yeah. Kind
really,
of. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why. I
can help.
Did.
They just, yeah. They're appealing to the people that want to know that the ingredients actually go into the process rather than throw it in the garbage.
That's
like,
true.
A day later or something.
Used after.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's absolutely true. And then it's been a while since we've covered any sort of lawsuits in the beer news. So here's a great one. A pair of course, California consumers are alleging Craft Brew Alliance tricked them
here we go. Yeah.
Into paying more for Kona beer by marketing it as brewed in Hawaii.
Do they say not? That?
No, they don't. They say
don't
nowhere
say
on
that.
The label
yeah. nowhere.
That it's brewed in Hawaii.
But it says Kona.
Right, right.
That's not what that means?
Apparently not.
Oh. Liars. Better join this lawsuit.
Right. The 56-page...
Like I make an English ale. Doesn't mean it's from England.
Wait. Yeah. Right. You mean my Sierra Nevada is not brewed in the mountains?
The 56-page complaint filed Tuesday by the Wand Law Firm.
Wand.
Apparently because maybe they make magic happen.
Oh. Maybe they'll win because of magic.
They work cheap is all that means.
I don't know.
Abracadabra, all your money's gone.
Details how Craft Brew Alliance allegedly used, quote, false and deceptive advertising to dupe consumers about the origin of Kona Brewing Company beer sold in the U.S. Many Kona Brewing products are brewed at CBA breweries in New Hampshire, Oregon, Washington, as well as City Brewing in Tennessee. The lawsuit reads, consumers purchase items and are willing to pay more for items because they are from Hawaii.
Who pays more for Kona?
I don't know that. I mean, he's clearly trying to target, like, craft in general and hoping the judge is a fucking idiot. But, yeah, I don't know, because Kona's relatively cheap because it's distributed. It has three breweries, right?
Because it's not shipped from Hawaii.
Right, exactly. It used to be. Right. I think, and then wasn't Pyramid Brewing for them for a long time or something?
Yeah, they started. Yeah.
Well, and now Pyramid's a part of the Craft Brewers Alliance.
That's true.
Windbrewers can't talk shit on that.
Craft Brewer Alliance spokeswoman Jenny McLean said the company just learned about the lawsuit yesterday and declined to comment on the pending litigation. The Kona Brewing Company website acknowledges that about 12,000 barrels of beer are produced at the company's brewhouse in Kahlua, while the beer produced in the continental U.S. is made, quote, under strict guidance and with the recipes and beer specifications are dictated by Kona Brewing Company's brewmaster who oversees blah, 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 blah. The beer brewed at Kona Brewing Company partner breweries utilizes Kona's hops, malts, and proprietary yeast. The water mineral levels each brewery are adjusted to replicate the water used in Hawaii. A sample of each batch of beer is sent to the Kahlua Kona Brewing Company. Blah, 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 blah. However, in 2015, a federal judge approved a nearly $20 million settlement against Anheuser-Busch for allegedly deceiving consumers into believing Beck's was brewed in Germany when it really was made in St. Louis.
That actually won?
That won, but then a federal judge tossed out a similar class action lawsuit against Red Stripe when consumers claimed they were duped into buying the Jamaican-style beer that's actually brewed in the United States.
So, a good thing, right?
It sounds it's like nobody knows what the fuck's going on. It's the Wild West, right. And so this asshole, whoever the fuck filed this lawsuit, found a lawyer willing to take the case and just trying to get a bunch of money.
Well, based on the two referenced, it's a 50-50 shot.
Yeah,
might as well try.
The court finds. Oh no, this is about the Jamaican thing or whatever.
Well, lawyers need jobs, also.
Do they though?
I'm sure somebody thinks that.
Let's do the Twitter game, Warren. What was the Twitter game?
The Twitter game was, if the Brewing Network was on Yelp, what would our reviews be?
Yes, and? What did we get?
Well, I didn't actually add up all of the rankings and figure out the average. That would have been something probably worth doing.
No, that's fine.
Oh, there's a score on Yelp?
Right, yeah, to figure out what our average would be.
I see. What are they running?
I would guess that we're probably like 2.5, maybe, or maybe actually probably close to 3.
Ooh. Even.
Is that a 10 or 5?
I'm assuming it's out of 5. Is that what you're
saying? I'm not familiar yet.
I don't know. I'm guessing 5.
We'll see. 5.
Yeah.
5 sounds fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not what we got, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Let's see. John A. says, my favorite podcast to listen to. Tons of information and lots of laughs.
What?
2 out of 5 stars. Yeah. Exactly. Brian says, dumb podcast with dull people spewing regurgitated information on a third grade level. Rating 5.0.
Oh, yeah.
So they get it. They've been on Yelp before.
Both very consistent.
Yeah.
Here we go. Jesse P. says, I was pleasantly surprised as I had very low expectations, but the manager was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
2 out of 5, he says.
Okay.
Let's see. Adam says, funny, informative, great example of this great example of the podcast style, but I prefer YouTube videos. 2 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, of course.
You have your computer set up for the swipe is upside down for me. Oh. So I'm scrolling up every time and not getting to see the
You'd think you'd learn by now.
I know.
After how many times of doing it.
I don't game as much as you.
So that's fucking true, dude. By the way, I downloaded GTA 5 again, so if you ever bored.
Oh, how was that?
It's great still.
Oh, that's the old one.
but it wouldn't load, but now on the PS4 it loads just fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you want to fucking, if you want to up your gaming hours.
All right. Yeah, like, I have time. William says, great podcast, full of amazing beer and sexist information, 1 out of 5 stars. I'm more of a wine and cheese guy.
And he's not so hot on the sex.
Huh? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, not sexist.
Yes.
Let's see. Brian says...
Oh, Brian.
Yeah, Brian with a Y.
Fuck that guy. Learn how to spell, dude.
Yeah. Best to go when Justin is on vacation or out taking his B12 supplement. Should be fine 98.23% of the time. Let's see.
So that's what, like a 2-star?
Okay. Well, yeah, he didn't really rank it. He just made a comment. Mitchell says, tuned in for smart beer talk. Heard about one guy's dead feet and an old man's nap schedule. Maybe my life isn't so bad. 5 stars.
There you go. No fucking experience for it.
Old man's nap schedule. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Peter says, I'm not sure what a beardy is, but I know I want it nothing near my beer. 3 out of 5 stars.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. Jason says, no Four Loko on tap. False advertising. The sad job I go to the bathroom was okay, but didn't make up for it.
The sad job?
The sad job I got.
Oh, the grieve like, job.
He meant grieve job.
Yeah, I was confused
but
by that.
But maybe you can't have as many characters, so he can convert it to sad.
We can pretend, yeah, the grieve job I got in the bathroom was okay, but didn't make up for it.
Nah, he could have dumped the word the and spelled
right,
grieve.
Yeah.
He's an idiot. I'm kidding.
Yeah. Sorry, you don't win this time.
No.
Okay, JBC Brewing says, he's only second best podcast in all of Chechnya. Must translate for a better review. 3 5. 3 of 5 is best most generous.
In Village, we only have 3 stars.
Yeah, they just got Twitter.
We were promised 5 stars.
Yeah.
But government only developed 3 stars.
Can't figure out how to make 2 more stars. Yeah.
Need but more still, resources.
But still 5
in
out of 5
Chechnya, stars. Star only has 3 points.
We have to trade goat for other 2 points. Yeah. No one's seen goat before.
Our good friend Annie Johnson, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Unless there's more than one Annie Johnson.
Oh, no, there couldn't be. I fucking hope not. I can only take one Annie Johnson. Yeah. she's fucking great, man. I love that.
Tons of great info, knowledgeable talent. Tasty, more crusty, and JP really serves up the laughs. A must listen. 2 out of 5 stars.
That's Annie Johnson.
Must
right.
listen. And that's it.
Okay, those are some pretty good ones.
Yeah.
So yeah. That averages what, two stars?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Somewhere between 2
well,
and 5.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
That's pretty high, though.
2 to 3. Yeah.
It's not Yelp, it's Yek.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yek with a Z-H.
So I had the YouTube video comment guy.
Right, I'm more of a YouTube guy.
Yeah. Yep. The sexist comment guy.
Okay, yeah.
The old man's nap schedule guy.
Right. Yeah.
And Annie's must listen guy.
It's a must listen.
Yeah. With 2 out of 5 stars or whatever she said. Because that's funny.
Yeah, I like the YouTube video guy.
Read him again for me.
Which one?
YouTube video guy.
Okay, scrolling through this backwards.
I didn't write his name.
Scrolling thing. So. That was from Adam.
All right.
And he says, funny, informative, great example of the podcast style, but I prefer YouTube videos.
Okay.
2 out of 5.
Yep, all right.
And then...
The sexist comment.
Sexist.
That's worth bonus points.
Oh, here we go. William says, great podcast, full of amazing beer and sexist information, 1 out of 5 stars.
Yeah.
I'm more of a wine and cheese guy. Kind of guy.
Old man nap schedule. Who the fuck was that?
Old man nap schedule was Mitchell.
I curse too much on this show. Mitchell.
Mitchell!
Mitchell.
Mitchell fucking Clark.
Mitchell.
Tuned in for smart beer talk. Heard about one guy's dead feet and an old man's nap schedule. Maybe my life isn't so bad. 5 stars.
I'm kind of partial to that one. That got the biggest reaction. Everybody agree, Bev?
I can go with that.
All right. Yeah, Mitchell.
Way to go, Mitchell.
Mitchell. Good job, Mitchell. You'll get, a 6-pack of beer. And,
yeah. Text Vivo or tweet or email. Go visit
email.
Vivo.
Do not text me.
Yeah, you can reach her at 925.
Anytime.
So we tweeted
the Mitchell theme song. I know this is really boring for everybody, but it's making me laugh.
What's the ribs?
Black, what in the world?
There we go. That's the one. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
I know it's really boring, but it made me laugh like fuck. So Mr. T Experience, not Mr. T Experience, Mr. Science Theater did a fucking Mitchell movie. And it made me laugh. So you guys got a segment into my brain. Are we ready to go, Warren?
Sure.
Thing.
All right. Oh, I did want to let people know that I'll be up at the Pacific Northwest Homebrewers Conference.
Yeah, that's where we're going with that. We
March
can't go
17th
now.
And 18th, Friday, Saturday.
Right. Okay. Bev, are we not doing that anymore? We were talking about doing that as a company, but we're not anymore, right?
Sorry, I turned my box down because I didn't want to hear the Mitchell song.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb.
What are we not doing?
The Pacific Northwest Brewing Conference.
We are not going to that.
I thought we were.
The Brewing Network is an IM.
Right. Yes.
Well, of course.
Well,
no. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm saying like...
Oh, he'll go to anything.
Oh, that guy? The old man nap schedule?
Right. Well, he's not napping.
Well, I'm on my schedule. I'll be napping in London April 19th to the 25th.
Okay.
Then I'll be napping in Dublin the 26th to the 30th or something.
Are you doing any collaboration naps while you're over there?
I'll be sleeping in some breweries.
Okay.
During collaborations.
Me and Bill are going to nap together.
I've got my specifications. I need rice hulls because it brings an extra
two. They're too dense.
Too dense, yeah.
Right. It's like a sleep number versus.
Exactly.
You don't want to get stuck napping.
No. You know what? That was you.
You're looking over. Oh.
No, Bev and I were.
Having a moment.
Kidding. We're having a moment. do you have notes ready for us to go? Or
yeah, well, I thought that's what you meant when you asked me if I was ready or not.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, I've got the Scream zoomed in so I can see it.
The Scream?
Nice and big. The big screen.
Got the Braille thing.
I wish you had the Scream zoomed in because that would be great.
I could zoom in on the screen.
All right. Mike, thanks for joining us for Beer News again.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
It's been weird, right?
Just slightly.
Yeah.
We won't make you do it next week.
Yeah, we won't touch you or anything. Don't worry about it. All right, Warren, are you ready?
Still.
Okay.
Still ready.
Go ahead and get us out of here, Warren.
Thank you to our show sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. Mike was here from Full Circle in Fresno, and he came up here to force New England IPA down our throats, and JP might have even liked it. Merge your love of Disneyland with your lack of engaging podcasts, and go to earsuppodcast.com as JP, Terrence, Bevo, and Taryn talk about all things Disney. Go check out Moscow's Hop Cartoons over at hoplife.com. Get on Twitter for some good beer insight and homebrew info. Follow Nathan Smith at Nathan Homebrew, Mike McDowell at Tasty McD, JP at Major Jip, and Warren is stuck over at Another Beardy. And the great Beverly is crushing cyberspace at Bevo 1. Today's show was produced by Bevo, and your host has been Jason Petros. Be sure to follow the Brewing Network and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Very pleasant.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Have a good week. JP does great as his cherry.